Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah.
It's Rick Ross. It's that LA Reflow right here. Now you're whining. Hold up. Sometimes I rhyme slow, sometimes I rhyme quick, sometimes I buy flow, so I supply bricks. Motherfuckers looking at me sideways, but can they tell that I'm getting money? Five ways, lot of leather wood and it's deep vibrate. Chatting with a bitch like your boy on my space. But she right here in my face. Take her to a fly place with a fly fireplace. No marshmallows, we had the troll burn. I done seen the world, girl, it's your turn. I told you lies all my life, but you pulled me down, wrong or right. So it's only right she get that Porsche truck. All black, black rims, call a Porsche. Let your weed blow in the wind, cause believe every D-boy need a friend.
Then can we get away and enjoy the show?
So when I like a bitch, I enlist Mario. See the Larios, ever glow with Gloria Estefan and Emilio. Baby Billy though, this your best bet. It'll be 6 O's in my next check. With a gun in hand, I always been a money man. Crack running man, fat Randall Cunningham. Look kid, I'ma tell you like this.
Baby squirrel use a sexy motherfucker.
Give me your, attention, baby. I gotta tell you a little something about yourself. You're wonderful, flawless, ooh, you a sexy lady. But you walk around here like you wanna be someone else. Ooh, I know that you don't know it, but you're fine.
Yeah. Go.
You know very well who you are. You're the only one. You've got my heart. And you've had a few. Boy, one too many. But I'm the only one to wake you up.
It was all a dream.
I remember the way we could see the so personal. You just felt you took in my love and now you know.
It was all a dream.
Y'all often know I really stay away from puritanical issues,
because those topics appear to be sensitive and kind of, in many ways, causes more confusion and division than not. But I've more so learned lately that in dealing with the issues that plague us regarding death, we have to have spiritual balance. It is a necessity. And it is my goal to make sure that I myself, as a deliverer of information, as a source of information, and as an example to you, the community, to the people, that I myself have spiritual balance and foundation. I'm going to take a short break, 30 seconds. We're going to come back. Please have your pen, paper ready. Please get your coffee or your water or whatever desired drink, because we're going to have a very explosive show, and I hope everybody enjoys it. We'll be right back.
From across the room. Excuse me, miss, don't take this wrong. I couldn't resist that smile and those beautiful eyes. I can see that you wear fancy clothes and drive a fancy car. Your hair did and your nails done, looking like a superstar. Can I take you out to dinner, babe? 'Cause that's something that I wanna say to you. My love is all I have to give. Account seven figures, and I may not have a sailboat and a big old mansion, oh no, but I do know how to love you, baby, and in my own way, in my own way, I'm with you, baby. I really hope that none of this don't matter, and I hope that you don't judge a man by his status. Wondering if you and I can get together, know each other better, and I promise you I'll give my all and make my heart your passion. I give you all I have. Love is all.
We're back. Hopefully everybody can hear me clear. I tried a different method of communication, tried a headset, but my followers in the chat said that That is not the clear Sharif we are used to, so I went back to the telephone. So as we're back, I want to repeat and reiterate what I said in the beginning. We're going to have some special guests on the show. Priest Alicia will be joining us here shortly. And Kelby Smith from HisAdvocates.org, a Christian ministry out on the West Coast. And I have to say publicly that I've done some private consultations with this group. I've received an abundance of emails from this group. And this group, if I can say anything else, is that they're professional, they're educated, they're focused, and they're spiritually grounded. And with all the communication that I received from this group and other groups, once I started looking into the history of this group and how it started and the members of this group, and once I perused their website, which you can view at HisAdvocates.org, if you would go to their website, you will see why this group is making such profound statements, and most of all, that are coming together collectively to deal with this crisis of debt in our society. The founder and owner of this ministry will be joining us later on in the show. The priest Elishua will be joining us later on in this show. And if you don't see by now, Brother Sharif has a goal to add some spiritual element to this crisis, because myself, from personal experience, have learned in my personal life, in my occupational life, and in my duties and obligation to this network and this show and the people that are on it, that you have to have spiritual balance, foundation to deal with these issues. And as y'all know, I stay away from puritanical issues because it becomes at some point in time, divisive. We all have our beliefs. We all have our ideologies, our theologies, our theories. And no man or no woman can come in between the beliefs of another. Your beliefs are firm. They're embedded. They're passed on through generations. They're tattooed into our minds and our hearts. But another thing we have to understand is that we can respect each other's religious preferences. We can respect and learn from one another's deities, and we can still come together, because in this commercial world and in the world of debt, we are the same. What they are doing, they're doing to all colors, all creed, all races, regardless of your religious preferences, color of your skin, background, historical preferences, historical beliefs. We are all economic slaves to the system. And we perish through a lack of knowledge and a lack of education. So Kelby Smith will be joining us here within the next 30, 40 minutes. The priest I'm expecting any minute now. The call-in number for the network is 424-222-5250. If you have a question or comment or concern, you can press star 1. Again, that number is 424-222-5250, star 1. You can be placed in the queue to ask a question. The email address for the network is highfrequencyblogtalk@gmail.com, highfrequencyblogtalk@gmail.com. And if you want to reach Brother Sharif, who hosts the Tuesday show, which is myself, our address is staff, STAFF, at consumer-law.com, staff at consumer-law.com. And you can be placed on both of those email addresses, and I suggest that you do so on both. And with you being on our contact list, you'll be the recipient of any type of information as far as webinars, seminars, or information about commerce, debt, puritanical issues, things of that nature. You receive all the information offline, and I ask that you contact us on those email addresses to be placed on our contact list. I'm going to go into some information here. We're going to start off the top of the show, as usual, with announcements. A couple of webinars is coming up. Brother Sharif will be hosting. I will be doing a webinar on Saturday, March the 8th, 2014. Saturday, March the 8th will be part three of the FCRA, Fair Credit Reporting Act, part three. We will be focused on strategies, information regarding cleaning up your credit, making money while doing so, the Fair Credit Reporting Act, going over complaints, my experiences, my beliefs on how you draft those complaints and how you handle them, how you file them. We'll be having a discussion on that. Part three will be Saturday, March 8th. Another webinar we'll be doing is February the 15th, webinar with myself and Priest Elishua Yahweh. And y'all are familiar with the priest. If not, there is an entire show that I've done and a webinar that's available for you to get or experience the type of knowledge that this brother brings to our country on spirituality and dealing with debt and dealing with our society and dealing with the judicial system. We will also, on this coming Thursday, be doing a webinar for those that are economically challenged. I understand that some of my webinars, although they are not, the donations are not exorbitant, I know that some people can't afford to do so. So I am doing, at the suggestion of some of my listeners, webinar for a donation of $25 that would give you an overall understanding of the FDCPA and how to implement that law against some of the illegitimate debt collectors you may be facing. That will be on Thursday, 7:00 p.m. Eastern Time. Thursday, 7:00 p.m. Eastern Time. Webinar, donation of $25, affordable for those that don't have the financial energy to participate in the more extensive webinars that we offer. You can email us at staff@consumer-law.com and get the details of that and reserve your seating for either one or three of those webinars. Again, February 8th, webinar part three, FCRA. February 15th, webinar with the priest and myself. Thursday, the 6th of March, 7 p.m., webinar for those that need a basic understanding of the FDCPA and how to utilize it in your own situations. We're going to go over some news. I'll have my guests showing up shortly. I'll go over some articles that are of importance, that I think is of importance to the community. And we'll start off with story of a very, in my opinion, rich man who obtained a $6 million judgment against U.S. Bank. Gentleman's by the name of Mr. Rosenberg. I'll just tell you about his story. And the article is pretty long. I'll just tell you my translation of the story. Maury Rosenberg, was a real estate guru, I believe. He was worth upwards of $50 million at some point in the real estate market. I believe he also was, he ran a radiology screening center as well. He obtained some loans during the height of the real estate market when everybody was getting loans and buying homes, and he became very wealthy doing that. U.S. Bank had gave him upwards of, I believe, $20 to $30 million in loans. And upon the destruction of our real property market, he, like others, became unable to keep those loans. Okay, so he went in and filed bankruptcy. And subsequently, he started suing U.S. Bank for some of the wrong that they were doing within the loans, many of which some of you are experiencing today. And after suing several times several different lenders, he was able to obtain a judgment against U.S. Bank for $6 million. The reason why I bring this story to task is I want to share with you what happens when one goes up against these, I'll just say it in that manner, and the type of strategies and destruction and manipulation one may experience while dealing with these national banking associations and some of those employed in illegal society. Now, Mr. Rosenberg, like anyone else, he's not as wealthy as you are, but he played the commercial game. He benefited from the commercial game. He did receive and obtain loan from the commercial game. But when he was unable to play anymore, and he didn't have the financial stability he once had, he went on the offensive. He found some laws that they broke, and he went after them. Okay? And he was successful in obtaining a $6 million judgment against U.S. Bank. But what happened afterwards or during is what I want to bring to the community's attention. Because the man almost had, was almost broke. He lost most of his assets. He lost most of his money. He experienced marital problems, parental problems, occupational problems, much of which all of us and you probably either are experiencing now or have experienced in the past. So he used that information, and he hired attorneys to sue U.S. Bank Corp. All right? And he asked for a jury trial. All right? And once he obtained that judgment, the attorneys for the bank did a lot of things that I feel are currently going on today. And that was, they used the system against him. They used this legal system to drain the man of all of his resources financially and to break his spirit. Just from reading the article, I don't know if they were successful at breaking his spirit. But I will say that he complains in the article that the bank offered his attorneys money to not represent him. They filed multiple lawsuits against him that he had to defend or he would lose. So they forced him into a position to where he either had to continue hiring attorneys because they were just filing suit after suit, motion after motion, pleading after pleading. And what they did systemically is to make sure that they almost pummeled the man financially for him having to pay lawyers to defend him to where that $5, $6 million judgment wasn't going to benefit him. He would have to give that back to the society that was representing him because they had to defend all the offensive and defensive actions that the bank was taking against him. And this is what happens a lot with all of us on this call that are dealing with debt collectors, be it foreclosure, be it credit card, or any other source commercially lending practices. And it's an indication and an example of what you may experience when you go on the offense or the defense regarding debt. The reason why I bring up Mr. Rosenberg as an example is we have to not only be skilled and educated in what we do, but we have to also understand the devil and the demon that we're going up against and the type of strategies and how they play and how they don't play and how they use us to carry out their own purposes. All right? Mr. Rosenberg is responsible for his own decline financially. Again, many of us on this call, we played in the game. We executed contracts without knowing what those contracts were about. We executed agreements without reading those agreements. But once the time comes to where we have to live up to our responsibilities, there is some offensive measures one can take to level the playing field. But understand, once you enter into that playing field, that there is no love in war. There is no love in war, and there is no war. There is no love from these banks. They don't care who you are. They don't care what you do. They don't care that you have a family or that you have kids. They care not. All right? Understand that. Take that from this gentleman, Mr. Rosenberg. Read his story. You can find that story at msfraud.org. Title of that article is Battling a Bank to Collect a Judgment. I urge all of you to go on the site, read that article, and hopefully you'll be able to take something from it. All right? I want to go on to another article in the mainstream news media about debt. And that is an article written by Holland University of Maryland Law School, School of Law. I'm going to read certain parts of this article. It's very lengthy. You can read this article at stopforeclosurefraud.com. It is an article that I definitely will send out to all of the people on my contact list because it's one that you need to read. If you do not read anything else, you need to read this article and understand how this debt game, this article will enlighten you, and it will spell out everything that my show has been trying to deliver into your conscience. All right? And the title of it is Debt Buyer Lawsuits and Inaccurate Data. And it was written by Peter A. Holland, University of Maryland, School of Law. So it was written by a law student. Okay? And I'll read these certain parts so you can understand the point that I'm making. Advocates for lower-income families need to be aware that many debt collectors are suing the wrong people and for the wrong amounts. Over the past decade, banks have increasingly moved away from collecting defaulted credit card accounts in-house to a model of selling off bad accounts for pennies on the dollar to debt buyers. The accounts are sold as is, pursuant to contracts in which the banks state that the debts may not be owed, The amounts claimed may not be accurate, and documentation may be missing. I'm going to read that one more time. I don't care if you have a credit card debt, foreclosure debt. I don't care what it is. This applies to debt in all of them. I'm going to read that again. The accounts that are bought by the debt buyers are sold as is. Any of you ever purchased a car, and on the window there was a disclaimer that said as is? Okay. That means you bought it in its condition. Might look pretty on the outside. The leather might look good. Might not be any dings in it. But mechanically, internally, or substantively, it may have some issues. And you're buying it subject to those issues. So they're selling these accounts as is pursuant to contracts, listen, in which the bank state, okay, the banks that are selling these contracts to the debt buyer state may not be owed. Yes, that's what the banks tell the debt collectors when they buy the debt, which is why they pay 3 to 5 cents on the dollar. We'll go into that. The amounts claimed may not be accurate. Is that not against all the consumer protection laws that I've discussed on this show? And documentation may be missing. Yes, that's the disclosure or disclaimer that the debt collectors, debt buyers get when they're purchasing these contracts. Despite the broad disclaimers, debt buyers then pursue these accounts and seek to collect 100% of the face value of debts for which they paid only 3% or 4% of face value, sometimes much less. Is that not what Brother Sharif discussed on this show? So they buy these debts when the banks already said, hey, the amounts may not be owed, okay? The debts may not be owed. The amounts claimed may not be accurate, and documentation may be missing. It's like you buying a car saying, look, the brakes may work, the engine, you know, might cut out, and the tires may be dry rotted, all right? That's the condition of these debts. So the debt buyers then go and they seek to collect 100% of the face value of the debts. You all can recognize that because many of you that think you're in foreclosure, and many times you will do a debt validation request, and what the debt collectors will send you is a copy of the note and the mortgage. I said a copy. And common sense should invade your space at that time and say that, well, that mortgage and note was from 2005. This is 2014. So I'm asking you, Mr. Debt Collector, to validate and or verify your debt, and you're sending me what this article said, the face amount of the debt. Are you saying I didn't pay a penny? Or is that an admission? You don't know what I owe. I'm going to go with both of those answers. All right? So the people pursued are often the elderly. Did I not just speak about our mothers and our fathers that we need to protect and take care of? The poor, which some of us that call in on this phone is nearing. Low-income families with this economy, that's a lot of us, with limited resources to hire a lawyer or take a day off from work, which is one of the strategies they employ, to go to court and challenge dubious claims. Instead, they tend to either enter into a settlement, modification for all of you, or fail to appear in court, which is why there's a 96% default rate with foreclosures and debt collection. 96% of us don't show up. They are then subject to a default judgment and subsequent wage garnishment, which is money taken out of your paycheck. The ripple effects of a court judgment and garnishment cannot be overstated. Bounced checks, family stress, impaired credit scores, and potential obstacles to the victim's ability to get a job or an apartment. Now understand this. This debt crisis we're dealing with leads to other issues. Family stress, family destruction, depleted and deplenished spirituality, which we're going to go into today. Potential obstacles in getting a job, because you have to understand now the new form of discrimination is pulling your credit to see if you are qualified to get a job. Now, what does credit have to do with getting a job? I have no idea. They pull your credit for insurance. They pull your credit for cable. They pull your credit for electric. All right? That's where we're going to. Let me go on. Selling off debt. Debt is sold at low prices when banks have little or no documentation to provide the buyer, often just an electronic Excel spreadsheet and a few monthly statements. The contract of sale between the bank and debt buyer, I want y'all to understand this and write this down, this terminology. The contract of sale between bank and debt buyer are known as forward flow agreements. Forward flow agreements typically contain broad disclaimers of warranty, including warranty of title, legality, validity, documentation, or accuracy. Further, the contracts usually provide that ineligible accounts may be included in the bulk sales, even accounts where the debt has been paid, settled, discharged in bankruptcy, or was never owed to begin with because of identity theft or other fraud committed against the consumer. So you have to understand that these forward flow agreements that the bank gives the debt buyer often have these disclaimers in it that says that, look, the bank's telling you, we don't know if they owe the debt. We don't know if it was paid. Sometime they were discharged. Sometime it was a result of fraud. This is what is in these forward flow agreements. This is why they sell the debts for 3 to 4 cents on the dollar. And if you buy it in bulk, as they just mentioned, you can get it cheaper than that. But they're collecting 100% or trying to collect 100% of the face amount of the alleged debt. This is a game they're playing with you. I don't care if you're in foreclosure or you're being sued by MasterCard. Doesn't matter. One widely publicized forward flow agreement, states that the account balances are only approximate. This is the language that's contained in these agreements when the debt buyers buy them from these banks. All right? So it says in there that, look, we're making this disclaimer to you, debt buyer. We don't know if they owe it. We don't know if it's valid. We don't know if the documentation is reliable. We don't know if it's accurate. We don't know if we can warranty title. We don't know of its legality or lack thereof. We don't know if it's a result of robo-signing or fraud or identity theft. They got it all in here because the bank's going to always indemnify themselves. You understand? Just like when they have these foreclosure sales, they tell you, we don't know if we're a junior lien or senior lien. We don't know if we owe this much or you don't. You're just buying what we say that you're buying. And what we're selling, we don't know. Okay? Y'all need to read this article. I will send it out. If you are on my contact list, you need to read it. Because if you read that, I think you will have more of an understanding than many about the condition of these debts and what they really are, which are nothing but worthless paper that is used to kill family fibers, that is used to destroy spirituality, that is used to destroy our country. And I just read to you from a law student how they're doing that, what document you should be requesting in discovery. I've read you articles from the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau who has said the same exact thing. I don't know how many times or how many articles I must read for you to understand that when you call in this show and you're reading about cases and you're talking about debt, I've said it to you in more languages that they're not debts. Do you understand? They're not debts. They're worthless accusations based on nothing. Not even evidence. Let me read to you what debt is. Debt is the context of loans, the amount of money due from the borrower to the lender. This may include success to the lender, in a simple mortgage loan, the amount of money due, the identity of the borrower, and the identity of the lender are clear. Now, this is credit cards, too. So is it a debt? No. You don't know who you owe. Right? Is it evidence? Absolutely not. Is it admissible? Absolutely not. What is foreclosure? Let me say it again for those of you that may think you're in foreclosure. Foreclosure is the system by which a party who has loaned money secured by a mortgage or deed of trust on real property requires sale of the real property to recover the money due, unpaid interest plus the cost of foreclosure when the debtor fails to make a payment. After the payment on the promissory note, which is evidence of the loan, have become delinquent for several months, the lender, can have a notice of default served on the debtor stating the amount due and will set a foreclosure date, after which the property may be sold at public sale. Now, I read to you the definition of foreclosure, and that should handle most of you calling in saying you're in foreclosure. You're not in foreclosure. That's a legal definition. You don't have a lender taking your property. What you have is what I just read to you in this article is debt buyers and debt collectors that have partial information. How do you know they have partial information? Because when you did a debt validation dispute, or if you were confused, and many of you were, and you did a QWR to a debt collector, and they answered you by supplying a copy of the note and the mortgage, did it not click in your head that maybe you're dealing with a debt collector? Maybe they have no idea what you owe. You know you've been in your home 5 years, so they send you a copy of the note and the mortgage as if you never paid a penny on it. So you're saying that you're suing me for the full amount of the instrument. Tell me how you're doing that. Okay? How is that being accomplished? All right? Let me read you one other article. See, my guest is in here. Summary judgment denied to J.P. Morgan Chase based on issues raised by the Nardi deposition. All right? If you guys don't know about the Nardi deposition, N-A-R-D-I, the deposition by a J.P. Morgan Chase Bank employee, okay, who under oath admitted that J.P. Morgan really didn't acquire any loans from Washington Mutual. All right? J.P. Morgan did not acquire any loans from Washington Mutual. Okay? That deposition is out there. Why are you arguing when you have an official from Chase say that we didn't acquire anything from Washington Mutual? We acquired some buildings, pretty office furniture, some vaults, some deposits from the FDIC, but we never acquired any loans. At minimum, we may have acquired some servicing rights. All right? So that's for you J.P. Morgan Chase people. All right? If you use these articles in conjunction with the knowledge that is passed forth on this network, you should have a whole lot less problems than you have now. But let's go into why we must have some spiritual foundation. You know, I called the priest the other day, yesterday, and I shared with the priest some various topics that we talk about. And I've been friends with the priest, Alicia, for a very long time. Not a very long time, I'd say a couple of years. And he's always been a source of spiritual energy. He's always able to replenish a depleted spirit because I am a source of information. I'm a sponge for many of you and others' frustration dealing with the debt restraints and shackles that are upon most of us. So I absorb a lot of negative energy. I absorb a lot of your issues, and I pray that I deliver a proper response, something that will not only help you educationally, but I try to deposit at least something into your spirit while doing so. So there are many times that I get on the phone or I'm talking, and the priest would pick up and he would say, "Brother Sharif, you need to plug in. You need to pray. You need to go in the closet. You need to wring out that sponge. I can hear it. I can hear it. It's passion mixed with frustration." And he's always been able to uplift me spiritually in a manner that nobody else can. He's always able to see through the off language I may use at times. Because of that frustration, because of what I see the people go through, because of what I hear from the people when they call in, the mothers, the fathers, the youth, the elders. So I'm passionate. I've always suffered from sometimes a great deal of passion. And, you know, other people suffer from that same passion, and I'm going to bring on Kelby Smith, and he's probably going to tell you about the passion he experiences with his ministry. All leaders have passion. And while I'm speaking about passion, let me say something to the founder of this network, Brother Youssef. We all listen to each other's shows, okay? And if you guys know Brother Youssef, he's passionate. If you know Brother Paul Savage, he's passionate. If you know Brother Sharif, we're passionate. We sometimes bleed for the people. We hurt for the people. We want the people to have the knowledge and information that we have. We want the people to stand up and take their affairs amongst the men in this country, because we are the source of life. Corporations don't have life. They're fictional. They're artificial. They're ink on paper. They don't have a soul. They don't care. These uniforms that we see every day, these robes that are put on, what do they have? Well, you would be surprised to know that many of them, if they don't have anything, they might not have morality. They might be people that only want to enrich themselves. They might be power hungry. But one thing that I learned that every person have, whether bad or good, is that they have some sort of spiritual foundation or awareness. If you watch a lot of the mob movies, you will see that the hitman always goes to his priest and many times confesses about his wrong behavior, about the death that he has committed, about the crimes that he has committed. There has to be a release of guilt with everybody. And when I was talking to the priest always was able to replenish my spiritual content. He was always able to bring me down to a level to where I was back into my element, and my element is my delivery. And what I was saying about delivery is that sometimes our passion gets in our way. I hear some of the callers on this show that call in, and they're frustrated. They're depleted. They're demoralized. They're embarrassed. Their spirit is sometimes difficult to take. their spirit is sometimes so destructive that you almost can't feed them the knowledge that they need. I listened to my host and the founder of this network, Brother Yusuf, yesterday on his show. And as you know, Yusuf, like myself, we can go off on some tangents because we're absorbers. We're sponges for our communities, for our people. We're sources of information. We're relied upon. So sometimes we get angry. Sometimes we get frustrated. Sometimes we cuss. Sometimes we go on rants. At that time, we don't have that spiritual balance. Sometimes we have to wring out that sponge. Sometimes we have to release that frustration. So every time I talk to the priest Elishua, he always refers to me as king. Hey, king, how you doing? Hey, king, what you doing? And when I got off the phone with him on yesterday, I said something to him. Something came into my spirit, and I said, you know what, priest? I'm embarking on a lot of traveling here. I've had invitations from the UK to 10 states within our country of the U.S. And I said, I realized that a king can't be without the priest. I need the priest. I have to stay spiritually grounded. I cannot get into this war mentality, and I can't feed that war mentality to the people without having a balance of spirituality. And I just thought about it. I said, the king and the priest is what came to my mind. And I hadn't read that or seen that anywhere. And the priest said to me immediately, he said, Brother Sharif, do you not know biblically in the Bible the king, wherever the king went, he took his priest? And I said, priest, I never knew anything about that. He said, I never knew anything about that. He said, well, brother, listen, you don't know who and what you are totally, because you have to understand that you can't deal with these things without having spiritual balance. Your delivery will be educational, but it won't be as effective if you don't have spiritual balance. And that statement brought me to a point where I understood clearly that I have to maintain spiritual balance. If you want to go out into this world and engage these debt collectors, these debt gods, this legal society, some of them that don't care about the fact that you have a family, that you have a wife, that you have kids that wants to go to better schools. They don't have morality. And many times they don't have spirituality. But how much more effective would you be if you were able to remain poised? You were able to have the knowledge and education of the law and maintain your poise wrapped in spirituality. I've seen it. I've seen it work. I don't care what judge you're going to go before. I don't care what attorney you're dealing with. In most cases, they're going to have a higher power that they subscribe and believe in. I don't care who it is. The mobsters have it. The killers have it. The Crips have it. The Bloods have it. Gangs have it. The legal society, they have it. So I want to make this point, and I'm going to move on and bring my guest in. I'm going to make this point, and I'm going to make it clear. If you don't have spirituality while dealing with these issues, you're not going to win. This devil is way bigger than you. These banks have no soul. How can they have a soul? They're artificial. It's the people behind the banks that want to win at all costs. You won't win using their language. I've already showed and demonstrated that. Because their language has elements of evilness, of confusion. What are you going to win on? What's the three things that you're dealing with debt? The facts, the evidence, and to whom is owed. That's it. It's not difficult. We've been bamboozled long enough. You don't have to listen to this show for 6 months to have an understanding of that. I don't have to read another article. If you go into the archives, if I never show up on this show again, you should understand what you're dealing with. If you go in there and you want to quote all this case law and all this other nonsense, and you want to talk in a secondary language and not know what the words are and what they mean and understand that it's not used in its plain and ordinary meaning, you're not going to win. If you want to take on an attorney, a lawyer who is skilled in being a wordsmith, who will take something that may only need three words and say it in 20, and if you don't follow the meaning of the other 17 words, you lose, and you have no spirit, you're going to lose. It's just a game. To them, it's a game. To you, it's everything, because it can remove you off your spiritual foundation. It can remove your attention from your wife, from your husband, from your kids. It can cause total destruction. And if you have no spiritual balance or content, they are good at moving you off of your square. They will move you off your square. Many of us need to understand that we have to be poised, but we have to remain spiritual. I witnessed a trial not too long ago with a family relative. Actually, it was last week. And she was a plaintiff in suing a major pet store. It was a slip and fall case. She was suing for some millions of dollars. I was asked to come there for support and direction, and I did so. And I, again, watched how our society works. There was a jury of 12. The plaintiff was the family relative. And the plaintiff put on their case. And it was extensive. It was long. They had to create a story in the minds of the jurors. They had to frame their complaint and tell a long story of how my relative sustained injuries at the hands of this pet chain store. And the defendants was a high-powered law firm. They were very short. And they were short because there were several things missing. Although this was a family relative, there was some evidence missing. There were some facts missing. And there was some liability missing, or some liability that should have been shared based on the accident. So when closing arguments came about, or rather when cross-examination was ongoing, the defense attorney, which was a woman, very poised, very calm. The plaintiff, which was the relative attorney, very animated, very loud at times, but really didn't have much substance. Okay? This was a $5 million lawsuit. So on cross-examination, the relative was asked certain questions based on her testimony at trial on that day and based on deposition that was taken some years ago. And the deposition and her testimony at trial conflicted with each other. In fact, they totally collided. And the defense attorney, very politely, very poised, very spirited, went up to the stand and asked the plaintiff, "Is this your deposition from such and such day?" "Yes." "I'm going to read the question that was asked of you in that deposition, and I would like for you to read, so I don't mingle it at all, add or take away from it. I want you to read what your answer was." And she gave her a copy of the deposition, and she asked her to read page so-and-so, question number 5. And she said, "Can you read that out for the jury?" And when she read it, it was totally different from what she had claimed under oath in her deposition. Okay? And she went on for about 30 minutes. Never got excited, very spirited. And she pointed out probably about 8 to 10 questions was answered differently than it was at trial. And it was embarrassing, okay? So on closing remarks, the defense attorney, and I'm sharing this story for a reason, the defense attorney had the plaintiff had a very long closing. They were trying to tie in information. They were trying to make up for the contradictions and testimony and depositions, and they were trying to get evidence through to the jury that didn't really add up. And the defense closing was mostly, "Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the plaintiff has the burden of proof. And that burden of proof cannot consist of stories, ideologies, wishes, acting. It has to be admissible as evidence." And she said that the plaintiff had a very compelling case, not supported by the evidence, not supported by the testimony, not supported by the documentation. And basically she told the jury that there was not much to say. You heard the testimony, you seen the documentation or the lack thereof, and the defendant can rest because the plaintiff has not proved their case. Now, I thought that was probably the most effective closing remarks that I heard. It lasted all of probably 15 minutes. The plaintiff's closing remarks lasted about an hour and a half. And it made me think to myself, and I'll just tell you the results. Did she win the case? She won $500,000. She was asking for $5 million. There was some liability. But it shows you that $500,000 compared to $5 million demonstrated they didn't have much of a case. When you're dealing with these debt collectors, what evidence do they have? I just read to you the article that shows they don't have any. You see the assignments, is that evidence? No. You see the note in the mortgage that they send you, does it have their name on it? No. So are they owed a debt? Three questions, real simple questions. How much do I owe? What evidence do you have that I owe it? And what evidence do you have that I owe it to you? Real simple question. Do they have the answers to those questions? They absolutely don't. Do you have to be spirited in bringing this fact forth to the court? Absolutely. Because if you go in there wanting to war with them, and if you go in there with those 50 case laws, and if you go in there playing their game, you're going to lose. And if you go in there with that destructive spirit and that attitude that you want to show them up in their own venue that they practice in, that they wrote the rules, you're going to lose. So what do you have to have? You have to have knowledge, because we perish from a lack of knowledge. We have to have evidence. We have to have facts. And they have to prove that you owe them a debt, not somebody else. So how can we deliver that? Very spirited, calm, cool, and collected. Do you not notice that attorneys and the judges are always calm and cool? Some of them, you know, they're trained to be that way. If you're frustrated, they win. If you're disheveled, they win. If you have no spiritual foundation, they win. You can overcome a lot of those with spirit. You understand? They all go to church. They all pray some deity. So why wouldn't you go in there with the element of spirituality? Many of us have too much spirituality to where we're so high-minded to the point where we're earthly no good. Meaning, we can quote the Bible front to back, but we omit salient parts that tell us we shouldn't even be in debt. The Bible speaks against it. If you listen to the show yesterday with my co-host, the point I was going to make was that he had a very spirited show yesterday, to the point where I called in and had to let him know that, brother, you are delivering with spirit. He was in his lane. You need to listen to Brother Yusef's call yesterday. It had a spiritual element and an educational element. And when that brother's in that lane, can't nobody touch him. When Brother Sharif is in that lane, can't nobody touch him. When Brother Paul Savage is in that lane and we're balanced with that spirituality, can nobody touch him. When you're going to hear from Brother Kelby Smith, when he comes on, he's going to tell you about how he maintains his spiritual balance and how nobody can touch his group. I hope that you understand where I'm coming from and that you take what I'm telling you in the spirit by which I'm delivering it to you. We have to deal with this from a spiritual grounded position, because if they're allowed to destroy our families, keep us frustrated, keep us off balance, you're going to lose. And you're going to lose more than house, more than the judgment, more than the debt. You're going to lose you. Because at the end of the day, these houses and this debt is something that we never should have gotten into in the first place. And if we can understand and read and recite the Bible front to back, why is it we haven't read those contracts that we executed? I've met some of the spiritually high-minded people, and they can go back esoterically, historically, and tell you what happened in AD 27, but can't tell me what is in that mortgage contract that you signed or that credit contract that you signed. Can't just go in there with spirituality. You have to have both. You have to have knowledge of the law, knowledge of self, knowledge of that contract, and knowledge of spirituality. I'm going to bring on my guest from hisadvocates.org, Brother Kelby Smith, and he's going to tell us how, what his ministry is about, in his own words. After Brother Kelby Smith comes on, we're going to go into our questions and answers, but I just wanted to share this with you because it was on my heart, and I thought some people would be uplifted by the information. I'm going to open up his line, 714-4444. Kelby Smith, is that you?
That's me, man. Thank you for having me on your show. How you doing?
Thank you. Thank you, brother. Thank you. Thank you for waiting patiently.
That's all right.
As I said in the beginning, yes, sir. As I said in the beginning, I didn't meet you. Well, this is actually the first time we've talked. Let me let the listeners know. I met many of your members who sent me some of the most spirited emails and communications that I've ever received. And this
awesome.
Is indicative of what you're teaching and the spirit you're deferring. I will have to tell you publicly that you are doing an outstanding job at being
Thank
a
you.
Leader and a thermostat for your people. So I'd just like you to tell us about you. I read your web.
Wow.
I looked at your website today. I had no idea it was that informative. It had that much information. I'm going to just say this before you start. I grew up Christian. in a household where, you know, we kind of praised the pastor. We kind of had a building from the time I was 4 years old and didn't build anything when I left at 16. So I've been around the pastors that fly around in helicopters and have houses inside of football fields, but all the members are in debt, losing their homes. Many of these churches still have building funds and want you, you know, repave the lots. And, you know, these guys are millionaires, and they can't teach you anything about the reality of debt and what's destroying our family and the fibers of our community.
Yeah.
So if you would tell us about you and those type of things, I would appreciate it. The floor is yours.
Well, but thank you, sir. I appreciate that. And just to before I get into me, just to address what you said about pastors, you know, we're all men. We're all women. We're all just human beings, and we make mistakes. And I've been at the same church for 22 years. I'm still waiting for the conversation where I can sit down and let the pastor know how wrong he is about many different topics. Where will that conversation lead to? Will I be outcasted, or will it be received because I can prove it in law? I deal with everything from a jurisdictional standpoint, just as I'm sure you do. I understand the light and dark nature of what's really happening in this world, and I have a different opinion than a lot of people, than a standard quote-unquote Christian. I believe the Word of God is the Word of God. I believe man's interpretation of the Word of God, or different interpretations as it's written, have been changed, and I can prove it. We are to still be the light. That shouldn't be our excuse to walk away from serving God or walk away from understanding that the Word of God is the Word of God. But we should investigate, dig in, and call to our God to teach us what He would want us to know and learn. I started His Advocates about a year and a half ago because there was no platform for people to socially come and help each other on these financial issues. And I got to say to you, listening to you, I'm like, wow. Number one, there's a lot we have in common. I've been on my own since I was 16. I have a heart that if there's an issue and somebody is hurting, I cannot overlook that. I have to deal with that issue. You can't walk by the person on the road because you're a the story of the Good Samaritan is just ever so clear. We need to humble ourselves and help people. And it's really hard for me. It's like one of the things we have at my church, and this is a church I go to and I attend, and I love the people, but they're blindfolded. They don't understand what's really happening in this world or what's going on around them. And, I look around the room, my eyes are opened, and I see God as the Elohim, the omnipotent, the all-powerful, and that power lives within us as a quote-unquote Christian. But every single Christian that I know, the second they walk out of church, they forget about bringing forth that power in their lives. They forget about how to use God in their day-to-day walk, and I do too. It's hard to realize the power of God that we could have, that we can invoke, that we could bring into our cases, and we teach this stuff. We have shown people statistically that people that submit their stuff, their cases, their lives, their hearts, whatever, over to the all-powerful God, that they're statistically, they come out in a better position than the people that don't. We have proven this over and over. We have a lot of guys that help out and a lot of guys that are working with people, and we talk about this and we pray about the people and we pray for the people, and we see that they have, the ones that fight it are the ones that lose. The ones that think that their home is the end all are the ones that generally have the problem in keeping their home. But the ones that submit their home to God and say, look, I'm willing to do whatever. I'm willing to live where you want me to live. I'm willing to serve you in the capacity that you want me to serve. Please forgive me for my sins and walk in that light. Those ones have extreme success. Now, that's a tough thing to understand because a lot of people don't want to accept the fact that there's even a God, and that's fine. Trust me, you're talking to a guy who was the Doubting Thomas of Doubting Thomases. I grew up, I rebelled starting, I think, at age 12. I was a horrible example of a human being from probably 13 to 20, 21 years old. And I lived my life the way I wanted to live it. I abused every right, every law ordinance that God had commanded man. And you know what? I paid for it. I paid dearly for it. And I would call God, if you ever remember the movie Forrest Gump, where you got the guy that is on top of the mast in the ocean in the middle of a storm, and he's calling God out. That was me. And I was calling God out. And he did something in my life that I needed. And he literally performed a miracle in my life that showed he existed, showed that there was a power. And I'm amazed by that power, and I have been ever since. And an example of that power, go type, if y'all got a computer, and we know you do, go to YouTube and type English pub, and I'm trying to remember the guy's name. I'll think of it in a sec. But this is a story where you see God's power being brought to man where they are literally healed. Because we fill ourselves, especially you and I, brother, we fill ourselves with crap every day because we're dealing in man's system, man's laws, and we're seeing the oppression of what I call Satan or the enemy, whatever you want to call him. We see the oppression of that coming forth through the government, through the court systems, through these attorneys, whose oath of office is to the corporation first, second to the state, and third to their client.
That's
and
right.
We see that oppression being delivered with a bat, and their whole goal is to get us to submit into the system in which says we are a citizen and employee of that corporation, and therefore we have received the benefit, and therein lies the right for them to impose whatever they want to do because we have received a tangible benefit through a driver's license, through a right to travel passport, through Social Security benefits, through whatever. And clearly, that those are God-given rights and that we are outlined underneath the Declaration of Independence. And I believe from the very beginning, man, Satan, the enemy, and his minions have worked towards taking that right away. And I say it like this. Back in the day, the king did not have a cell phone to call the United States, his cronies, and say, hey, do this, do that. They had to plan years and years in advance because it took that long just to travel the ocean and get over and start working and infiltrating and dealing with the uprising of the people that were bringing forth the Declaration of Independence. Well, the Declaration of Independence in itself can be contested as a, is it really a document for the people, or is it a document for the 66 men who ultimately were majority Freemasons? And I say it like this. Well, you know, in our life, we can declare anything. And so we as a people are so dumb as a sheep that we've been under that Declaration of Independence, as we thought, but the reality is we've been treated like a subject citizen under the 14th Amendment that has received benefits and now is paying the debt of, and that's the truth. And so I tell people, you know, to get to heaven is the same way to get to the Declaration of Independence. To get to heaven, 66 men can't attest to you at the gate of your death and say, he was a good man, let him into heaven. You must personally declare and attest and have the faith of one of those founding fathers to separate yourself from the oppression and tyranny of the world system and to declare yourself to be under God only and a citizen of heaven. And that only comes through a submission to God, and that comes through a personal relationship with God. Well, there's no difference with the Declaration of Independence. 66 men can't attest for you. You must personally attest, and it must be at all times that we're dealing in a format of where they're trying to bring us into a personam and subject matter jurisdiction before their courts. Those are not our courts. There are good judges out there, very few, predominantly they're there to do one thing, and that's to put you in a prison bond and take your stuff, because you're bonded. You were bonded, and we don't even know how to live our life. We've literally been under the shackles of a dark regime for the last 150 years since 1861, basically. And I'm going to read you something, if you don't mind. This is off topic, but I just discovered this today. There are multiple jurisdictions on this land. If you don't believe it, go to hisadvocates.org, click on forums, click on government, and click on citizenship. I've put all the sites in there, Supreme Court sites that outlay. There's three jurisdictions for sure. There's the state, there's the original national republic, and then there's the de facto corporate. The de facto corporate jurisdictions, only jurisdictional guides is in the District of Columbia. You can read about that in the District of Columbia Act. You can go to Title 28, Section 3002. It'll say the United States is a federal corporation. You can also go to UCC 309, subsection H, I believe, if I'm even saying that right, where it'll say the United States, with the uppercase U, its exclusive jurisdiction is in the District of Columbia. One of the definitions for Columbia is goddess of death and destruction. Tell you something, because he opened up with the light and dark nature aspect of what's going on in this world. I'm going to tell you something that many people don't know and don't realize and don't want to attend to. But this is going to be the most powerful thing you've ever heard, literally. When that corporation took over in the mid-1800s underneath Abraham Lincoln, let me take one step back. The reason why I'm telling you this is because it's all jurisdiction. We're fighting, and we need to realize it's all jurisdictional based. If you really knew how to fight under God and to retain your jurisdictional rights under God, you're untouchable. And that's what he wanted me to talk about and why. Well, I'm explaining the path of the jurisdiction that got us this way, and I'm going to explain in detail why it's a dark and light path. And whether you want to admit it or not, you're going to see something that you're not going to like, and I'm going to really expound on it because I'm going to make you realize that the one running the corporation is Satan himself. And if you don't think so, it's a group of men that sure worship him, and I'll prove it within 5 minutes. In 1861, we went to war to free, quote-unquote, slaves. All reality came back together in 1865. The war ended 1867. Right around then was introduced the 14th Amendment. And if you read the words, we went from under God as being sovereign under him only, because there's only one sovereign, and if he lives within you, that sovereignty lives within you. Genesis 1:26 says this: God requires us to go and have dominion over all the land, the birds of the air, the fish of the sea, the beasts of the field. That's a requirement. It says in Genesis 1:26. Well, excuse me. If you look up the word dominion, sovereign authority. So, I'm not saying go be a sovereign citizen. There isn't one. I'm not saying go behave like a sovereign citizen, because they make those people look really bad. I'm saying go have sovereign authority, which is the word of God's requirement over all this land, and that simply means dealing with people in a godly fashion, and taking what God has given you and making sure that you keep it under the jurisdiction of God and don't let man steal it. Because everything in this United States, there's a de jure and there's a de facto. De jure means original, lawful. De facto means not by right, not by law. So you look in, for example, California, there's 3,000 plus counties in this country. Well, in California, there's the Orange County. That's the de jure. That was the original. Then they became incorporated. Over the last 150 years, they have become incorporated. All the counties, all the cities, all the bureaus, all the municipalities, all the states have all become incorporated and reconstituted and recontracted its citizens. And so through these contracts, you have become subject to their rules and regulations, sites, codes, statutes, and ordinances. How do I know this? Very simple. Look at the Declaration of Independence. It has a lowercase u on the word united because it's an adjective describing the states, the noun.
Right.
So from that point forward, then they incorporated the United States, and I have found statutes and sites, not statutes, I found sites, case laws, where it's referring to the United States as a corporation as early as 1806. So
sure.
We had the trust indenture, that document called the Declaration of Independence. We could have declared ourselves on that document and become a part of that document, but we didn't. They later started building up, giving us our freedom, developing out the system of structure. And by 1861, they did a takeover. And from that point forward, in 1871, the Act of the District of Columbia Act of 1871 clearly outlines the District of Columbia as a municipal corporation. And nowhere do we have where the de jure United States is a part of that. It's a separate entity unto itself. And
so,
that
Kelby, what you're saying is, with the historical perspective on how we came to where we are, and I understand the historical perspective, and I want to get into more of the issue of debt and how you're helping your followers release themselves from that. We do understand how we got there, and I appreciate that historical perspective building up to how we allow this corporation to become what it is now. And basically they've
okay.
become to own us. So take us into the things you are doing at hisadvocates.org in terms of, because I mean, one of the most powerful things I read at your website was the first scripture verse that you had on the top. And I'm going to read it. Jeremiah 1:9-10. Then the Lord reached out his hand and touched my mouth and said to me, I have put my words in your mouth. See, today I appoint you over nations and kingdoms to uproot, tear down, to destroy and overthrow, to build and to plant. And I think that's some powerful words for leaders such as yourself, my network, myself, Yousef, Brother Savage here on this network, is I think that scripture verse definitely correlates with what we're trying to do, because we're trying to be over certain nations, and we all have our individual nations, and I'm glad we're able to come together and share ideas and perspectives. We all are building our own kingdoms, and we're trying to uproot and tear down evil debt, and to destroy and overthrow evil, okay, and the debt God, and to build and to plant. And when I speak of planting seeds for the future, what are we giving our kids with this debt? Why do our kids need to have $250 sneakers on and we're in foreclosure? And why do we need to acquire debt just to maintain a lifestyle that's beyond our means? All of these are individual things we need to analyze with respect to debt, because we are successful, and your group is very successful, as well as some other groups and myself and my groups, at relieving a lot of this illegitimate debt. But then I want to talk about and get your opinion on where do we go from here? Are we going to go right back in debt? Because once we free that house up, or we're able to get rid of that $20,000 judgment or credit card, are we then going to go right back to the debt God? Or are we going to fall for the pretty advertisements and the marketing that, you know, will give you 100,000 Federal Reserve notes for your real property, okay, which is ridiculous? Tell us about what you're doing and how you are teaching your people on first relieving themselves of debt and then not going into debt again, if you would.
Well, we show them the simple fact that the debt system is ran by the what we would call the enemy or Satan, that God does not want us to be in debt. And when they understand that, because you can, as you know, you can help somebody, bring them to the water, teach them how to drink, and he'll go right back to living in the mud and the mire, getting into debt and doing whatever he can to be under that system. So our goal first and foremost is to show them the light and show them who is running the dark. And that's the important aspect of what we teach. We open up our calls in prayer. We pray for the people. We have a prayer ministry where the leadership gets together. We pray together. And we put on our full armor. And, you know, it's weird to say this publicly, because this was not me 20 years ago. To talk about God 20 years ago was a prideful thing. But I've gotten to the point where I'm starting to understand that this is serious. And we're at that stage. And once they get that grasp, you know, we're constantly introducing stuff to teach them all aspects of how to deal with the debt. And we just kind of give them a little bit here and there, like you just read the scripture on the home screen. That is important, because they'll just glance at that and boom, it hits you like a ton of bricks. Let me quickly say one thing just about that Republic aspect, because it's tied into the debt, and you're going to have an understanding of something maybe a little more when I'm done. That'll take me 1 minute. The last known de jure president in 1861 was James Buchanan. He left Washington, D.C. with Abraham Lincoln to Abraham Lincoln's memorial or inauguration on March 4th of 1861. Today is 154 years later. And today, the Republic president, who was put in by the Republic people, that de jure Republic nation, I don't know if you understand this or know this, and I'm just telling it to you. You can go investigate it yourself. The newly elected president who's taken the and going to do the inauguration today, his name is James Buchanan Geiger. And so the interesting thing is throughout the Old Testament, we have God showing that people need to submit themselves to him and then bring themselves to a point of worship to God. And so the last known president's name of the de jure Republic is named James Buchanan. The new president being inaugurated today is named James Buchanan Geiger. The name Geiger means musician. And so we have spent 4 or 5 years rebuilding that de jure lawful. So it's an interesting story that I'm just telling you. One of the main things that we do, and we're doing right now, is we're dealing with the core of all debt issue, which the chain of title is critical to understand that if any portion of the chain of title is broken, you have an opportunity to bring that before a court, to bring that before the county recorder, whatever. And so once you understand that you've developed probate value with that chain of title assessment, people often misinterpret forensic loan audits and chain of title assessments and loan document audits as evidence. I mean, I've had attorneys stand up in seminars and say, I had 4 forensic audits that were introduced as evidence and they were kicked out. And I'm like, yeah. They don't understand what the word evidence means under the Federal Rules of Evidence of 902. They don't understand that evidence is only evidence once it's been had an opportunity to be heard. And as we know, they don't allow for the evidence to be heard 95% of the time. Then once it's heard and had an opportunity to be cross-examined, determined as to whether the person that is introducing that evidence into court and showing through that affidavit the years of experience, expert witness testimony that has already been determined as expert witness testimony by the person who wrote that audit, then and only then would that audit be considered evidence. So we have these fights that are really what I would determine as probate value, and it brings forth, you know, a chain of title assessment or a forensic loan audit. They bring forth probate value at best, and unless you have somebody that is one of 3 people in this country that are considered expert witnesses on chain of title, you're not going to ever potentially be heard, and that breach maybe not ever be dealt with, meaning the break in the chain of title. So a couple of things that guys on our website are doing to cut me off anytime if I'm over-talking myself.
No, no, you're doing great. Go ahead.
Yeah, like you, I go on tangent. The couple of things, one of the things is very simple, and you guys got to check this stuff out because this isn't just us. This is on YouTube. People are having success. If you understand what a contract is, if people are bringing case, let's just say, for example, if people are bringing a case of quiet title to court, the only person you're obliged to sue is the one that's on the deed of trust, meaning sir, personally.
Yes.
So what people are doing is they're serving personally the member on the deed of trust, the lender, who's no longer a quote-unquote holder in due course or a party of interest. And then they're publicly serving all the other people, Freddie Mac, Fannie Mae, whoever, MERS, you know, anybody else that's made a claim or stake on the title. They publicly serve them in a newspaper, and within 30 to 45 days they're getting a default judgment because they don't show to court.
That's correct.
It's that simple. People are out there doing this. And so look one up on YouTube. You'll find out that there's many cases of people doing this. And so that's one opportunity for you. Another one is go find, and remember, we're talking about how do we use the breach of the chain of title, how do we get it into court, be seen as evidence, or have the most significant probate value possible. Because the lawyer, is going to have a relationship with the judge. The judge has a pecuniary interest through his retirement account or a simple fact that he has an obligation to the state to protect its interest, really is the owner of all loans. Everybody bringing a cause of action in court is really just a third-party debt collector working for the state on a major commission. If you don't realize this, we really need to do our work and research. But the reality is we're playing an acting game. If you go look up courts and look at their EIN numbers and look at what they are called, it's actually pretty amazing. I'm going to look one up real quick while I'm thinking this. What they do is they call them, I forget, hold on, give me a second, it's going to come to my mind. If you look at how they're registered on Dun & Bradstreet, these courts, they're corporations, they're registered. Like, for one example, the probate court, we just looked it up for a buddy of mine at Cambridge, Massachusetts. It reads that they're a theater production. All right? So those courts with the guys with the big black robes, they sit about 3 or 4 feet above. They're showing their hierarchy. And you got the next level, which is the bank, which is the clerk sitting right next to them. With the seal, stamping, that's how they make their money. They're bonding these cases. And you've got a theater with the seats in the back for the people to sit down, and you've got the actors that are up in the bar, and you've got the jurisdiction, which is the bar itself, the swinging bars, that means jurisdiction. And you're walking into their jurisdiction, and you're going to, unbeknownst to you, you're part of a play, and they're doing an act that day, and the act
Correct.
Is unfortunately not going to be to your debt. It's going to be to your detriment, but they're obliging the aspect of the corporate structure of who they are, theater productions, and that's a reality. So how do we get our stuff into court to receive the highest possible probate value and to be entered as evidence that would allow for us to smoke them? Pull out the 45 of law and pull that trigger and smoke them.
Right. Kelby, let me say this, and let me read for the listeners. When you speak about evidence, which is a topic that I spend a great deal of time on, and those are the three things, facts and evidence. Evidence pursuant to the Federal Rules of Evidence, since you brought it up, I want the listeners, they can Google Rules of Evidence, Federal Rules of Evidence, Rule 803, okay? And it says clearly, hearsay, and that's one of the words I focus on. Hearsay, pursuant to 803, means a statement that the declarant. Now, understand they said declarant, okay? A declarant, all right, does not make while testifying at the current trial or hearing. And a hearsay is what a party offers in evidence to prove the truth of the matter asserted in the statement. So most of your pleadings that you get from these debt collectors and their attorneys is hearsay. If it's not made in a declaration, all right, testimony, or while testifying at trial or at a hearing. So we can venture to say that most of the complaints that we have is just hearsay. That's why I say, where are the facts and where is the evidence? So you have hearsay.
Beautiful.
Okay, rule against hearsay is 802. Hearsay is not admissible unless any of the following provides otherwise: a federal statute, these rules, or other rules prescribed by the Supreme Court. That is the rule 802 against hearsay. Now, let me tell you what Rule 803 says. Exceptions to the rule against hearsay, regardless of whether the declarant is available as a witness. The following are not excluded by the rule against hearsay, regardless of whether the declarant is available as a witness. Present sense impression, a statement describing or explaining an event or condition, excited utterance, then existing mental, emotional, or physical condition, that's not considered hearsay. But everything else is hearsay. So I just wanted to make that clear to the listeners, and I'll let you go on. We have another eight minutes in this session, and I want you to go on about what you were saying. Sorry to interrupt you.
No, no big deal. Thank you. As a matter of fact, one of the things that we need to remember is, and this is a part of court training, and people just don't get it, but when you're looking at the pleadings, which is predominantly hearsay, and you've done nothing to object or strike, and use, like you just said, statute code cites from the Supreme Court to bring that information that they're submitting, it becomes truth, fact, and evidence, or at least a contract in that court. And it will not be rebuttable, or it will not be allowed to be used as one of your points to go back on an appeal. And so one of the things that we teach is anytime that you don't agree, and which is everything they say, object. The fact remains is that you've put an objection on the record, win or loss, for your ability to fight it at the next level. Now, what we're seeing people, and I'm just going to say this. Now, do I pronounce your name Brother Sharif?
Yes.
Okay. One of the things that we're seeing is that no matter how much we teach people courtroom techniques, no matter what you do, you can have months and months and months and months of training. We're dealing with actors that are experts at getting you to contract.
That's right. And
that's the unfortunate nature of an administrative law tribunal, which is what they are, even though they don't want to admit that. You can hold up the federal rules of evidence. You can hold up the what are we doing today? You can hold up the big fat book.
Which one are
we going to honor today?
Right.
And they're gonna look at you and they'll try to recontract with you in a different sense. We're going to say one more time, according, you know, I'm holding up your books, your own books. Which ones are we doing today?
That's right.
And the fact remains that we can't teach people every aspect of how not to contract. The best way that we describe for people how not to contract is to just slow down, hear every word, and understand that every word has a different meaning than you think.
That's right.
If you're trying to, you know, and we get big into words. Words are everything. The word understand, under Webster's 1913 definition of understand, it means it's a jurisdictional question to stand under their jurisdiction. That literally is what it reads. So when they're saying, who are you and what is your first and your last name, there's a reality. Up until this century, we didn't have first and last names. We had given and surnames, okay? And those are de facto corporate copyrights. believe it or not. I don't care whether you want to contest this or not. It doesn't matter to me.
Right.
Where do you reside? Residence is a big one. That's a huge one. If you don't domicile, you're proving you're a resident of the United States Corporation under their jurisdiction. If you don't domicile, are you asking me where I domicile at?
Yeah.
And no, I'm asking where do you reside at. I mean, they'll literally come back and ask you the word reside again.
And Kelby, I agree with all of that, and I believe we also waive a lot of those type defenses because, you know, let's be honest with everyone, we're participating in the commerce. We're having intercourse. We're executing contracts. So a lot of those defenses are different than when we're dealing with debt collectors. And I try to educate the people on being able to win staying in the consumer debt protection arena. And, you know, names and whatnot to me don't matter because when I'm dealing with it, I don't care what you call me. You can call me Bozo the Clown. You can call me Kuta Kinte. It doesn't matter. I'm going to win. And I'm going to win on my knowledge. I'm going to win on the evidence or the lack thereof. And I'm going to win because I have a spiritual foundation. And you know, the names and the jurisdictions, I had a caller calling last week, and he was speaking about jurisdiction. I don't spend a lot of time on that. I said, listen, we can meet at McDonald's. We can meet in the desert. Meet me in Iraq. I don't care. Bring the debt collector to me or let me find out where they are if they say I owe a debt. I want to talk to them. I want to engage them because of my knowledge, because of the power, because of the education, and that's what we focus on. So I appreciate that on that. I got another 5 minutes left into my other segment. Again, Kelby, I want to say that your website, and those of you that want to see it, go to hisadvocates.org, is probably the most informative, spiritually foundated website I have seen. The information on here, and let me tell you the importance of what Kelby does. And this is why I had this show. In order to deal with this debt crisis, it depletes or absolutely empties the bank spiritually. We're frustrated. Many of us stay up all night. I've been there. We've lost hair. We lost help. We've lost hope. And what I like about your website, and I don't know if this was intentional or not, Kelby, but the way it is structured, every paragraph or every article you have about debt ends with some spiritual passage. And this is so important. This is why I have the priest. I'm going to bring him in. And this is why I realize that it's so important. And listen to you. You're so poised and you're so knowledgeable that you have the right spirit in your delivery. Yes, we have to have the knowledge. Okay, we have to have the education. We have to know the law, the contract. The Bible is a law. Okay, so we have to have that. But I like the way your website is set up to where it has such a spiritual aroma that you don't get angry anymore. You don't go into court wanting to fight. You don't think that because you read a few things that you can go into their venue and beat them by using, like you said, their language, not knowing what words mean. Often I hear a lot of the callers and a lot of the people that I deal with start to go into this legalese rant to where they think they know what they know. You are not going to beat a lawyer at their own game. This is how you beat them with the facts. I'm going to bring a gentleman on that has been in the lion's den, been bitten by the lion, survived and walked out with spiritual success and knowledge of the law, and that's the priest. And he's an example of how to do so. And this man, what I love about him is that you will not detect a piece of anger in him. He is not disheveled. His spirit is not depleted. He has a very, very, very full bank account of spiritual revenue. And this is what I feel that I need to deliver to the listeners, because a lot of times I talk for 4 hours on my show. I don't know of a show out there. My host talks for 4 hours. When I came upon this network, when I heard of a four-hour show, I'm like, 4 hours? And a lot of my friends and loved ones, they'd be like, how in the world, Sharif, can you talk 4 hours, and what in the world are you talking about? So we have to, you know, I know sometime when you probably get off your shows or what you're doing, we're depleted, because often I get off my show and I go into consultations and I'm talking another 4 to 5 to 6 hours, and I have to maintain that spiritual foundation in order to deliver information with the right tone, with the right concoction. And it has to be a blend of knowledge and spirituality, because the people that you and I talk to and the people that look to us for guidance, the light we are to the people, we have to especially be healthy, which is what I'm going to have the priest talk about, be healthy, okay, be spiritual, because we absorb so much. Do you experience that, Kelby?
Oh yeah, you get smacked with what I would call just the dark. You know, there's so much negativity out there, and
yes,
it's hard to maintain. I don't know how you talk for 4 hours. I really don't. you know, I do a lot of study on both the light and dark issues. Now, one of the things I realize is I gotta fill myself up with God as much as I fill myself up with looking at, you know, what the enemy has done to thwart God's work here on earth. The bottom line is applause to you and your show. You got a lot of people talking about you on our website, and we're an open format. We don't push ourselves exclusively. We do have seminars in which we help people in information, but we promote people like you who can give good, solid information, and we don't ask anything in return. We want to see people that are successfully pushing and promoting ways to get through a debt system. We'd love to do a cross show with you guys and have you on over
sure.
on our show and introduce you to more people. I think that's how you win. Is it's a giver's game. You got to be selfless.
Right.
You got to stop thinking about how much is in it for me. God always provides. He's always there. He's always faithful. That's how we look at it. But I appreciate you and your ministry and what you're doing.
Yes,
and
sir.
The truth that you're willing to tell, I really do.
That's right. And I had a great time.
That are willing to stand up.
Yes, sir. And, Kelby, I want to say to you again, thank you for coming on. Part of you coming on was I was very impressed with your members who I met before the leader and the founder. And that's always indicative of a good leader, is that, you know, you reach his people. And when you meet his people, you know, you'll be like, wow, I have to meet the leaders. Like our children, when we raise them good, you know, they look, wow, I need to meet your parents. You're so well-mannered.
Yeah.
You're so well-versed.
Thanks,
and you've
buddy.
Done a terrific job. And I would say, you know, I see a lot of the mainstream, you know, ministries out there and churches, and, you know, everybody wants to feel good. And you know, this is why we're so depleted and dispirited, because we fall for almost anything. We fall for these processes, these gurus, because spiritually we're depleted. That if we were
right.
to rejuvenate and revitalize our spiritual bank instead of our bank accounts, then we would be able to see a lot of these processes that people have participated in. We'd be able to see a lot of these contracts that we don't read when we execute. We'll be smart enough to get away from them. There was a time when I grew up, and I'll say this lastly, Kelby, where, you know, my parents and grandparents was able to fill someone out by their spirit. That's what they judged. They didn't judge their clothes, what kind of clothes they had on, what they were driving.
Yeah.
You know, they said, look, I like that guy. He has a good spirit. I like that girl. She has a good spirit. Or I
awesome.
Talked to their parents. They had a good spirit. We've gotten away from that. And we judge people on
yeah.
the size of their house, their occupation, their connections, and things of that nature, which is why we fall for all these banking association scams and all these gurus that precede them with garbage. That we should be able to, when we look at it now, once we awaken, once we become conscious, we'll see that how in the world did I ever not see that? How in the world did I not pay attention to that assignment? How in the world did I not listen to that attorney saying all that stuff, and I know it wasn't true, and he got away with it? So, you know, I want to thank you for coming on. This was an effort to bridge the gap, and bring all of us together, regardless of race, color, or creed, because we're all debt slaves out there until we realize and band together that they really don't care what color we are as long as we're giving them green in return for our ignorance. So thank you very much. Your site, again, hisadvocate.org, is a great site. I am definitely honored to be able to come on to your show and bridge this gap and share information, because we have different things to offer, and we need to come together before we're able to be successful as a collective. Thank you so much, brother. We love you, and we know about you over here, and come back and visit us.
You got it. God bless, man. Have a good day, guys.
Thank you. God bless. You too. All right. Let me bring in the priest, and then we're going to go into questions and answers. We'll bring in the priest. Priest Alishu, I know you came in late. I don't know if you had an opportunity to listen to the beginning of the show. I share with everyone how you are my spiritual advisor. And for many reasons, everybody know Priest Alishua and his battle with the devil, and his story is so profound. And the reason why I share it is a key in my mind, because I try to make my listeners understand that it takes more than just knowledge. It takes more than knowledge of the law. It takes more than strategy. It takes poise, and it takes spiritual awareness and spiritual foundation to be able to deal with these issues without going crazy, without snapping like you're seeing out there, without people going and shooting up their employers and employment. We lack spiritual foundation. Without us falling for every fly-by-night man that got a word, without us falling for every guru that got a gimmick, we're depleted spiritually. Priest, come on in and give us your spiritual deliverance on how we need to strengthen up, and talk to us. Just give us a word, brother, because you're always able to do so.
Shalom Aleichem. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you clear.
Yahweh, I've been on the show with you, brother, for the last 2 hours. I just didn't press the *1.
All right. Okay. All right. All right,
first
brother.
First of all, let me open up with a prayer, King, and then we can go from there. I got to open up with the prayer and give everybody a blessing and a prayer before I even start any talking about anything, you know. So I'm going to say the Our Father prayer in English, and then I'm going to say it in Hebrew, if you don't mind. And it says, we're going to pray, and it says, Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done in earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily wisdom, which is the bread. And forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thy is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. Amen. And I will say it in Hebrew for those who have never heard of the Our Father prayer in the Hebrew tongue. And it's Tefillah. It is Ave Nu Shabashamayim, it's Yikar De Shemerka, Tavo Malkuteaka, Yase Razonka, Kivashamayim Kane Baritz, Elekum Kukenu, Tain La Nuhayom, Uslaklanu, Alkateinu, Kimososukim, Gamanaknu, Lakove, Tevianu, Veal Tevianu, Lade, Nishayom, King Kausenu, Mihara, Kilika, Amlaha, Vehar Givara, Vehatefetis, Leolomain, Olemin, Sila. Thank you. Amen. Brother, it is an honor being on your show with you again.
Yes, sir.
Love you, brother. I love everybody listening out there. Yahweh love you, and I love you, and we're going to continue to move together forward of all the good people of the earth. It doesn't matter what creed, color you are. Yahweh dwells within you. Second Corinthians chapter 9, verse 14, Yahweh is inside of every one of us, so there is no separation between you. When I see anyone on the street, I'm addressing the child of God, period. That's just the bottom line with me, and that's the way my mind is operating on. When I'm talking to you, I'm just, if it can be a police officer, sheriff, CIA, FBI agent, it could be anybody, I'm looking for the goodness in you. I'm looking for the God in you. That's what I'm looking for. I'm not looking for nothing else. I look past anything else you're doing. I'm looking for the goodness in you. And I'm glad that you have me on the show today again to just kick it with you, to discuss some of the dynamics of how come people are losing in court. And how come they're not successful, or how come they're in the debt crisis as they are, because we did not, Brother Sharif, we did not go back to the divine laws of Yahweh, which is we were supposed to go back to John 1:1, which in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with Yahweh, and the Word was Yahweh. So we did not study the power of words, because every word that you use every day has a positive and negative side, has a dark and light side, as the brother mentioned earlier. You have to understand the dark side and the light side and how to use each and every word. That's why the devil, if you read it from right to left, it means to live. He was once a living being in heaven till he got cast out of heaven, and he went to devil. And devil starts with a D-E, same thing as the debt collector or debt. You're dealing with the D-E, and D-E means to separate yourself or separate. He separated himself from God's presence. He separated himself from the divine mind. He separated himself and entwined, because when you put somebody in debt, you entwine them or you twist them into something that they never had conscious of, they wasn't conscious about. So I can go on and on and on the power of words and how to break down words and how to deliver yourself from the court system. It has nothing to do with the people. It's all about the spelling on the papers that they're using. They're casting a spell upon you when they're using these different words in these contracts. And if you don't know the power of those words, then you will fall under that spell, which is basically magic that they're using in court. That's why you have a magistrate on the bench. He's practicing magic with words, which is a spelling. And when you look up the word spelling, it has E-L in it, and the E-L in Hebrew means God. So they're using the power of the words of God inside of these words. They took all of the words out of the Bible and incorporate them into a corporate charter words, so you wouldn't know the difference. If you look on a lot of these contracts, all those words are in the Bible. They just took them and they put them inside of a corporate fiction to lock you into a corporate contract, which is in the Bible called a covenant. And Yahweh told us in Exodus chapter 23, verse 32 and 33, do not enter into a covenant with them nor their gods. So they have you pleading and taking a plea to the fiction called the state as God. So when you understand the power of words, and when you know how to do what Moses did, he went inside the courts of Pharaoh, which was commerce, which was business, which was laws of money, and Moses was given the rod. Yahweh gave him the rod on Mount Sinai. When he gave him the rod, when you look up the word rod means correction. Yahweh says, spare the rod, you will spoil the child. So we begin to not use the rod on our own selves, to correct our own selves in commerce, in these contracts. As you said, we jumped in these contracts and did not read these contracts, but we can quote the Bible from beginning to end and not even have never read a contract. We just signed our signature on and we just took off with it. So you want to be able to cast a rod to the ground. And when you study the word ground, they always say in court, you don't have grounds. That means you don't have support. You don't have a foundation. So you got to learn how to cast your rod. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, brother. I was just saying, Go ahead, brother. I'm sorry. I'm going to stop your wisdom. Please go.
So you got to know how to cast your rod to the ground, to have grounds in order to demonstrate yourself in these court system. Because when you cast your rod down, you can eat up the tongue of the serpent, because the serpent speaks with a tongue. He speaks with a split tongue or a twisted tongue. He will twist the words and into such a way to where you don't understand anymore. Just as you said before, don't think you're going to go in there and beat them at their own game, because that's their game. That's why you were supposed to watch a movie called Devil's Advocate with what? Al Pacino and Keanu Reeves. If you go back and look at that movie, who did the devil make as his adversary? He made Keanu Reeves, all of the attorneys, the adversary to go out and do his work. Satan, as the brother said earlier, this is being ran by Satan. You can go to the book of Matthew chapter 11 when heaven was taken by violent force. So when you get to understand how to work your way through the book, you'll be able to handle these people into the court system or anybody on the street of that matter with a negative force or negative vibration or negative energy or negative words because they're negative. So anything negative, all you got to do is use the positive to balance out the negative. Because Yahweh said, when I created good, he also said I created evil, but he said I created good to conquer evil. So you have to always return yourself back to being good. Correct your own self. Never mind trying to correct them. Correct your own self in commerce. Go back and read every contract that you sign, and you begin to learn how to use divinity words, the live words on these contracts, and go and reverse these things. You have to reverse them in order to bring yourself upright. Because a rod also is an upright staff. It stands upright. So you must uplift your mind and upright your mind because the word upright comes from the word moral or ethical or righteous. And that is what you need to take your mind to do. That's why Superman goes straight up when he flies off the earth. He goes straight up. Even in The Matrix, when Mrs. Smith surrounded Keanu Reeves, inside of the Matrix, he had to go straight up. So you have to, in order to get out of this circle of madness that you're in, you have to go straight up. You have to break your mind from the ground to a perpendicular level. Go straight up, and you'll be all right. This is what people are not doing. They are laying down. Let me tell you something that you did. Everybody in commerce, every last one of us, is the spirit of Lazarus. And I'm going to explain to you why you're Lazarus, every last one of you. Because when you sign a contract means that you're pledging to a fiction. You're pledging to the dead. So since you pledge to be dead, if it was a mortgage, if it was a car loan, a student loan, you pledge to be dead for that amount of years until you make that debt perfect. Right, okay. What are you supposed to do? You, Lazarus, supposed to come back from the dead and become living again and take over your estate, your trust, your name in all capitalization. So come forth, Lazarus, and stand and come from the dead, come from the grave, because you pledged to be dead. So now you must come back alive. Use the living word of Yahweh to bring your mind back to life. You understand that you have pledged this dead contract that you got yourself into. So you must cast down your rod and correct yourself first and raise yourself up out of this. You must understand that you are a bondsman in Egypt. That is why when I taught on the class, you must study the book of Exodus and the book of Joshua to come and conquer these courtrooms. And the book of Exodus and the book of Joshua will destroy everything that they're doing inside the courtroom. That's why that book was written in such a way that you did not understand. If you would study it metaphysically, then you would understand what's going on, and then you wouldn't have that problem dealing with these folks. So, again, your mind must be spiritually connected with your internal being. If you don't have spiritual power, if you're spiritually bankrupt, you are in trouble. Brother Sharif, yeah, that's such a powerful statement you made, that people must begin to add into their banking account spiritual knowledge every second, minute, hour of the day. Not when you want to, not when you're in trouble, but at all times. So when you get into the fiery furnace, or you fall into the lion's den, or you get locked up like Joseph did for 14 years, you can handle your mind because it's all mind power. Not physical, it's all in your mind. If you read that Bible from Genesis to Revelation, it was all about the mind. All about your mind. I don't care what book you read. It was all about the behavior of the individuals that was in that book, which came from the mind. That's why if you go back to Genesis in the 17th chapter, and Yahweh said every thought that came from man was continually evil. It was your thoughts. So you must change your thoughts and create positive affirmation thoughts every day, every second, every minute, every hour. When Satan tries to come into your mind, you must kick him out of your garden. Because Yahweh told Adam to dress and keep the garden. You must guard the den, guard your mind, not allow anyone to plant any seed or any type of thought inside of your mind. Because if they do, if they could convince you, and the word convince comes from the word convict, they will get a conviction. They will convince you and convict you inside of the game of commerce. Also, when you look up the word debt, if you look up in your Strong Results Concordance under the number 37, 46, it takes you all the way to the word felony. You become a felon. The word debt makes you a felony to the system of Satan. You fail on their jurisdiction. Okay? So all those words are nothing but the words of science, and you have to understand the science of words to be able to come out of this fictional world to strengthen yourself spiritually. So, brother, I'm going to turn the floor back over to you. If anybody need any questions, if they need me to keep talking, you know I'm willing to do it, King. Love you, brother.
Brother, listen. Brother, priest, listen, I'm ready to just give you the show. I can't get enough of that. Now y'all understand why, and this brother is so connected to me and is such a lifeline to my spirituality, because people like myself, my co-host Yousef, Paul Savage, we spend a lot of energy. If it's not researching, if it's not just trying to be that power pellet for the people, trying to be that information source so they don't have to be taken down by the debt devil. And it takes a lot out of us. And every time I've called this priest on the phone, for the last couple of years I've been knowing him, no matter what he's in this, why is he so profound? He's been there. Can you imagine an attorney, a court, any devil coming up against this brother spiritually, and then he has the legal and lawful knowledge to go along with it? Can you understand why he himself, the sole person who didn't have representation in the state of Georgia, facing 20, 30, 40 years under some RICO charges and other criminal charges, kept in the cage for 2 years and whipped by himself, when the others had the attorneys, he said, I'm going to handle this myself, and he was completely exonerated and walked out of that lion's den using what he just told you and his knowledge of the law. You cannot, this is not a guru, this is a real-life example, a real-life statute of what spirituality and knowledge gets you. He is not he's not in a museum somewhere. Do you understand? He's not selling his story for $1 million somewhere. He hasn't written a book. Oh, you understand? This is why this brother is so powerful, because every time I call him, I absorb a lot of negative energy dealing with this aspect and this crisis. And every time I call this brother, I've never caught him in a bad mood. And no matter what I might say to him or what negativity I might transfer to him through my conversation, he always says, Brother Sharif, I love my people. I love Yahweh. God can fix it all. And you have to understand who you are. And you have to understand that the king never went anywhere without the priest. And he told me that yesterday, and I just, every time I talk to the brother, he just sits me down. He calms my spirit. He removes all the negative energy, replenishes my spiritual bank, and I go right back out there. I feel like I just left the gym, and I'm right back out there bench pressing these issues with our people. And that's powerful, because I'm a brother that's not easily impressed. I'm a brother that's very skeptical. I'm a brother that sees life from a different lens. And I have a brother that's been through it that didn't come out bitter. Do you understand? The brother is not bitter at all. And that's something to be said about spirituality. I know some of you on the call have some calls. We have another hour left. We have 30 minutes left in the live stream and another hour after that. I'm going to get to your questions. But this show was necessary, if not for me, for many of you out there. This information you're receiving is necessary, because a lot of times I get a lot of you people call in and your spirit is so negative, so combative, that as soon as you come on the phone, the energy pushes me back into the chair, because I'm spiritual. Yes, I feel energy. It pushes me back, and I almost can't deliver the adequate information in its entirety. And with the spirit, I'm trying to do two things. I'm trying to answer your question, and I'm trying to calm your spirit. And I don't know if you've if some of you were on a call last week, some of you just don't want to believe the truth. And I'm going to read to you something that I read somewhere that I thought was very profound. And it was a passage that said, a lie doesn't become truth, wrong doesn't become right, and evil doesn't become good just because it's accepted by a majority. And that resonated in my spirit, because some of you call in and you're combative with me, and you're calling in trying to get some information and an answer, and you're trying to convince me of what you want to believe. You know who you are, and some of you will call me with the same question, and understand I have a memory like an elephant. You ask me the same question every week as if the answer I gave you before was not adequate. Where's your spirit? Where's your understanding? You have to have that spiritual foundation to make the transformation from unconscious to conscious. It's not, you can't do it just going cold turkey. You can't detox rawly like that. You have to have some spiritual foundation to be able to make the transition from evil to good. And priest, I'm just telling you, wherever I am, you will be. And it can't be any other way, because the power that you're able to emanate throughout your experiences, throughout your spiritual awareness, is something that needs to go hand in hand with the people, with the show, dealing with debt. I've read articles just last week where a few people committed a murder-suicide of their family. A couple of them was a police officer. A couple of them was engineers. A couple of them were bank executives. That is killing not only themselves but their family because they're in debt, because they're in foreclosure. Do you understand? So this is why I say it's important that we have this sort of implementation of spirituality, because this is happening out here. Homes of families are being destroyed. Kids are being destroyed. People are killing themselves, killing each other over debt, over fiat money, over currency, over a dollar bill that costs the same to print as a $100 bill. Because of something we print in some factory, we're dying. We're embarrassed. We don't want to go to church because we lost our house, and we're coming up with lies that we sold a house in a down market. I mean, this is, I see it all, and I've seen it for years, priest, and we got to deal with it, because spiritually, as you heard Brother Kelby Smith says, he said, listen, that's his belief. He said, God, let your will be done. If I'm supposed to keep the house, I'll keep the house. If not, whatever your will is, let it be done. If your will is to get knowledge and be able to prevent some devil from taking your house, that's what this show is for. I'm going to teach you that. But if it consumes you and totally just changes the dynamic of your personality and your spiritual foundation, because these devils are lying every day. They're sending you deceptive letters. They're taking you to a venue you're not familiar with, and you think you need to learn all the rules to play in their court. You don't need to learn all the rules. You need to go in there with the three things I told you, the facts, the evidence, and to whom do I owe a debt? Do you need to learn all the rules to have that? You absolutely do not. But this is where you need to learn the rules. When you start taking offensive measures and you want to go to them and you want to go ahead and get compensated for the lies, for the deceptive, for the practices that they committed in violation of the law. Now you need to learn the rules. But your learning of the rules is going to benefit you monetarily, because you're asking for money, not defending property. Let me bring in, I think this is one of my old co-hosts, 770-0969. You're on High Frequency Radio. Who's speaking?
This is Pam. I was in referencing something not similar to this, but it does have to do with debt.
Okay.
Someone that I
okay,
know,
can you hold on 1 second, sister? I thought you were one of my other co-hosts. I'm going to put you on hold, and I definitely will come back to your question. Okay, hold tight. One second. All right. I just wanted to make sure. I thought that was one of my other co-hosts. So, priest, I'm going to ask you to stay on the line. We have 23 minutes left in the live stream, and we have an hour after the live stream stream closes, and we'll go into the questions. I believe we'll be able to get to everybody, but I thought this show was probably one of the best shows that I've been able to deliver, because I'm tired of delivering information without delivering some spirituality behind how to handle that information. If we go into the court the way the priest talks, that's how he talks. I'm telling you, I've talked to the man early in the morning and late at night. He doesn't change. Understand, you can talk to me through in the middle of the day, and if I have to get through to some people that just don't want to understand, I might have a few choice words for you, which is what I'm trying to calm. Because, my kids listen to the show, and everybody, friends and relatives, kids listen to the show, and then sometimes be like, you were a little bit too hard. You were a little bit too abrasive. And I said, really? And they kind of checked me on that. They say, you just need to bring it down a little bit. But I think everyone understands on this show, and everyone understands, family and friends understand, that it's passion. It's not abrasiveness. And sometimes I'm trying to shock you, culture shock you, or prick your conscience in a way, because sometimes we deal with personalities, and sometimes people have strong opinions and views that they don't want to release, but they want to be able to absorb the information I'm delivering. And that's hard to do sometimes when you call me and you're already hard-headed, and then you want to ask a question and you want to argue about the answer, or you want to try to prove to me your point when you're calling me and asking me the question. So, I have to maintain some spiritual balance in order to try to deliver and have the Creator deliver to you what you need, at the same time be able to kind of ward off your spirit or your de-spirited rant sometime. And that's difficult. And that's when I call the priest, and like I said, he's always there. He always have a uplifting word. And I definitely see the need in addressing these issues. So we're going to go to a couple of questions. I'm going to start off at the top. Some people fell off. Hopefully you'll call back in. I know you had a long wait, but this information was necessary. We're going to go to 713-3906. You're on High Frequency Radio. Do you have a question?
Yeah, brother. How's everything going?
Everything is going well, brother. We're blessed. We're spirited. How about you?
I'm fine, brother, fine. I just wanted to say, ask a couple of statements, but, one was, just kind of getting your information that you sent me with the last donation, man. I got to say, it was great information, and it came in a very timely fashion. I had a friend that needed some help, and I was, kind of had steered him your way. I was able to help him with the donation, and it helped him today in court. So,
man, beautiful.
I know,
God bless.
Brother, what you're doing is a wonderful thing. Second comment, I heard you yesterday, and I want to chime in, but I couldn't, regarding the Bitcoin.
Yes.
I talked to Brother Yusuf a few times, and I'm no expert. I do a fair amount of research on it. I am involved with Bitcoin and several other alternate currencies out there, so I along that same line. So I would say that the Bitcoin is definitely a alternate currency, if you will, cryptocurrency, that's going to be around for a minute. It's taking some lumps right now, but it seems to be rebounding pretty strongly. So there's some things that are happening in the Bitcoin community, and I'll try to share some of that info with you via email as I get it, if you don't mind.
Okay. Yeah, brother, I appreciate that. And what the brother is talking about is my co-host and the founder, Brother Yusuf, had a show on debt and what debt is and what it is not. And he spoke quite eloquently about currency, and we have to understand what currency is. Many of us, we're dealing with debt issues, and we're trying to relieve ourselves of debt, but we have to make sure we don't go back into debt and make sure we don't fall for the marketing scheme. So, and we have to understand that, what we're fighting for, losing our families for, is paper money. And we need to also look at alternative sources, because what are you going to do when you're able to ward off the debt collectors from taking your real property and it's worth $300,000? They're going to send you a nice little a colorful letter saying that we'll loan you $100,000 for 0%. And what, you're going to jump on it, right? And let me tell you how this scheme is set up it's a win-win for the banking association. Who on this show can tell me that in 30 years they paid off a mortgage, or they paid off a 30-year mortgage. You would have to have almost a perfect record and deal with certain fluctuations in the economy for you to make sure that you're going to pay every last payment 12 times 30 years. I mean, is it done? Yes, it's done. But how many people are successful in that? So the bank makes you a debt slave for 30 years. You might have lost a couple of jobs in 30 years. You had kids that went to college in 30 years. You had to put those kids through college in 30 years, and you found a way to make every payment. So you borrowed $300,000 and paid back $700,000, and you think you won? Or let's say for the most of the people, okay, never did pay off their mortgage. They might have got 10 years or 20 years and lost it. So they acquired your property, okay, because you defaulted. The game is rigged, and we have to understand we have to be smarter not to go back into debt and live beyond our means and look at alternatives to playing in this game once you've been burned the way the public has been burned now. So I appreciate that, brother. I heard your answer. I was still on the phone. I did hear your answer, and I appreciate you taking the time to call back to make sure the community has information because, currency and alternative forms of currency is a form of debt. And we know how our country plays. We know how they get down. We know they don't give a darn about us. So we have to look at alternative means to maintain our economic stability. And I appreciate you sharing that information. Right. I might even have you on as a guest because if you're dibbling and dabbling in that, then you realize that, there has to be an alternative to the game that we're playing. And I definitely appreciate right. And I appreciate, look, man, to God be the glory on whatever information is out there that I get a lot. I don't take compliments to my head. I know that the Creator allows me to do what I do. I know it's not me. I know I can't go 4 hours talking to anybody, so I don't know what it is, but I know it's a higher power that allows me to deliver the information that I do, and I'm glad when anybody is uplifted by it, and I'm glad when anybody is able to grant me sentiments or congrats on something that I was able to do to help them in their fight.
Well, yeah, brother, I mean, real quickly, and just kind of give a little a synopsis on this paperwork that you sent in with the, and again, FDCPA stuff. The simple letter that allowed that home to be taken out of the batch to be sold this morning. I watched it happen. You know, he showed the letters that had already been faxed and sent to the law firm, but they, tried to pretend that they never got it. And we walked in there and showed the guy a letter. He pulled it out. You're not gonna deal with it.
That's right. That's right.
He stopped right,
and
he
this
stopped
is,
right there. So.
This is a part of the issue. You know, I speak to a lot of people, and I had a very good private conference call for 4 hours on Sunday with the members of the gentleman that was on, Brother Kelby from hisadvocates.org. And when I began to go into it, the kind of accolades I received afterwards that, that the information that you deliver, Brother Sharif, is not difficult, which is why sometimes it's hard to believe. We've been manipulated by CNN, Fox News, advertising, marketing, and just really we regurgitated and reciprocated amongst ourselves. We've passed this information down through generations, and sometimes when you come into the light, it's difficult to say to yourself, that was some nonsense I fell for. That was really some, I mean, that was just plain out, if you talk to yourself like I talk to myself, that was plain ignorant. Sharif, how did you even fall for that? So some of the people that I talk to that falls for these processes and procedures, and I look at it, I'll be like, what were you thinking about? You have to be spiritually depleted in order for you to fall for something like that. So, I'm glad that the information, the documentation I put out there is something that I can reflect on, because many of these gurus will always refer to somebody else's document, somebody else's story, somebody else's, concoction, and they have nothing to show you that they did something themselves that they can point to that was successful. And I'm not taking credit. I'm just trying to uplift the people and tell them that if you do it and you do it right, that it works. And what I preach on this show, and if y'all don't get anything else, is that I push self-empowerment. Self-empowerment, self-sustainability. Do it your darn self. Stop hiring people. Cause look at the win-win with the debt with the debt collection industry. Debt collector sues you for a $20,000 credit card, right? You don't have any knowledge of the debt laws. You have no knowledge. You didn't read the contract that you executed, all right? And they're suing you. You have no knowledge of the rules of procedure, court procedure, and things like that. So you're going to do one or two things. You're going to be a part of the 96% that don't show up and get a default judgment, or you're going to be one that go hire an attorney and spend $5,000 for the attorney to fight $20,000 debt you never owed, and then you still might be found liable for that. Do you understand? When are we going to wake up and start empowering ourselves with this information, with the knowledge, so that we're not victim twice to the debt collector and the legal society? I'm not saying that we don't need the legal society. There's some great lawyers out there. I know a bunch of them. There are some great judges out there. I've been before many of them. There are some good people out there. There's some people that hate what's going on in society. Don't get me wrong, but I'm talking about for the masses of people, that judge will referee if you decide to engage in a fight and you don't know how to fight. I mean, it's not his job to jump in and protect you. It's his job that if you walk in there and you're not properly equipped, you don't have the right knowledge, you don't have the right spirit, if you go in there, like some of you do, with just a bit of information, just a little bit of information, then you're not going to be able to be successful, and that judge is not there to save you. That's not his job. You're either going to hire an attorney, pay attention, watch what he's doing, and learn for the next time, or you're going to be on the show listening to the archives, getting the information, getting the knowledge, so you can take that knowledge and pass it on to your family, to your kids, and empower yourself. I don't push any procedure on this call. I don't ask you for $49.95 at the end or the beginning of the call. You get information on this network that you should pay for. You should compensate people for. You understand? But you get it freely here, but we still call with 1,000 questions. We're lazy. We just don't want to do what we need to do to empower ourselves. So if you're a dependent, then, I mean, you have to pay your way through. And either that be an attorney this time and yourself the next time. So, brother, thank you for your call. I'm going to try to move on.
Thank you, brother.
I appreciate you. Email me, brother, and God bless.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, we're going to go to 718-718-0885. 718-0885, you're on High Frequency Radio. Do you have a question?
Yes, greetings.
Greetings.
You mentioned the article about a Washington Mutual employee.
Yes, sir.
Earlier in the show.
Uh-huh.
Could you refer me to that article or, like, what website that was on so I could read it? Because I used to be
sure.
with Washington Mutual.
Sure.
And then they transferred
Google.
It to Chase.
Okay.
But I had closed my account with Chase, my bank account, but, you know, I ended up paying the so-called debt off with the credit card. So, but I was just wondering, were there any class action suits involved with that? Or,
I mean, there's a lot of suits out there. But if you just Google, if you go to msfraud.com.org, you can
okay.
see that article. And if you Google the Nardi deposition, Chase Bank, you will be able to read that deposition. And for those of you that are dealing with Washington Mutual and Chase and them alleging they acquired loans of Washington Mutual, that deposition, which still stands firm because it was under oath, okay, still stands as evidence. And it was used against Chase Bank in a motion for summary judgment that was filed by Chase. And they just put in the Nardi deposition, and the court said, well, we can't give you summary judgment because here we have a deposition that says that Chase never acquired any loans. So, you know, I get a lot of calls. I don't know if we're really doing due diligence in our research, but this information is out there. It's been out there. And we have to study, and we have to really be proficient in our studies so we can help ourselves again. You have this network. You have his advocates.org. You have many other shows and people out there that are providing you with, I mean, as we call, golden nuggets to help you. And if you do a little bit of studying, my brother, I mean, you can rid yourself of a lot of this debt that is being levied upon you.
Indeed. The other question, I sent you an email and you put me on the mailing list, but I also sent in a request about the seminar that you and Alicia had, and I never got any information on that. Did you record all that right. actual seminar?
That is a part of the webinar series, yes. Priest Alicia, I believe, on January the 11th did the webinar.
It wasn't
that you. Is available. I'm sorry?
Okay. It wasn't you as well? Didn't y'all do
it?
Yeah,
it was both of us. Yes.
Okay.
It was both me and it was, the 2 hours was me, and the last 2 hours was Alicia. We're doing another one here March the 15th on Saturday at 10 a.m. And you'll get an email. If you're on the list, you will get an email apprising you of that event and the times and the donation amounts and things of that nature.
Is it possible to purchase, like, past webinars that you may have done? Or
absolutely.
Do you have those recorded?
Yes, there's five already. There's six, actually. Come this Saturday, there will be seven, and on the 15th, there will be eight. You can purchase any one of those. I'll send you a list, brother, of all the webinars and material that's available, okay?
Okay, so I'll send you another email. All right, thanks.
All right, thank you, brother. Peace. All right. We got 7 minutes left in the live stream. If you plan to continue on this call, you need to call in. Those of you that are in the chat, all you have to do is continue listening. And I just want to say something about the chat. First of all, honors to my chat. I have some of the most astute listeners, intellectual listeners on the chat, listening via their computer. But you're always going to have some people that always wants to come in and provide negative commentary to what's going on. What Brother Sharif is doing across this globe is bridging gaps. And we have to bridge this gap because one community is not accomplishing anything. I don't care if you have an all-white community, an all-black community, an all-brown community, an all-green community. None of y'all are accomplishing things on a worldwide scale unless you come together. I don't care what beliefs you have in a deity. I don't care what information you may have. When you come together, all of those pieces and everybody out there, a lot of us just have pieces. And some of the pieces exist across the water. It might exist across party line. It might exist across racial lines. And until we put those pieces together, we're not getting anywhere. And I'm going to just say this, even to the quote-unquote black community, until you start broadening your mind, opening up your hearts, and stop with this you own and you run and you don't, I don't see us accomplishing what we need to accomplish as a people. And I don't see that happening if every one of us woke up. We will make a dent in it, but until all of us is out of slavery, all of us are going to be experiencing some form of slavery. So, you know, I had some negative comments in the chat where I asked the brother to please dismiss himself because he wasn't adding anything. You want to come on the show, you want to ask questions, or if you have a problem with other people's beliefs, then that means to me you're kind of shallow. You understand? Because what we're dealing with is debt here. Whether you believe in Buddha, whether you believe in the tree outside your door, I don't care. You need to come together. Let's put together our resources, our mind, our ingredients, and come up with something that's going to uplift humanity as a whole. All right? All right, let's go back to the sister, 770-0969. Sister, you have a call. I did come back to you. What's your question?
Yes, thank you for coming back to me. I appreciate that. My question is, if you get an email, an IRS 1099 for a credit card that you had already disputed and set off a discharge, what would you do with that? Because they're saying they're forgiving that, but they're saying you have this assigned it to the IRS.
Oh, okay. You use some words. Okay, I got you. You use some words. And again, I'm a woosa, and I'm a bring up my spirit. You use some words set off and discharge, all right? And this terminology is used in different arenas under the belief that there is a method is used to set off and discharge a debt yourself. Now, I'm going to ask you before I answer you, what do you mean by set off and discharge?
A set off discharge instrument was sent to the creditor.
And so you sent off an instrument.
They said that it was they sent a letter saying it was discharged, but they reported it to the tax, to report it on your tax, the 1099.
Okay. So, I get it, since I've heard it all. I mean, so, yeah, I get you. So you sent an instrument off. Sounds like that maybe the instrument did work, okay, and some of those do get through. And they set off and discharged the debt from their end, but they seem like they did the right thing and reported to the Internal Revenue Service buying through a 1099A saying that we discharged it on our end, but we're letting the IRS know that we discharged $100 and she has $100 income. So now what you're saying to me is that they discharged the debt, meaning that they wrote it off. And
but
that would be considered. Let me finish,
okay.
Sister. I mean, like I said, I can fill in everything you're saying. So I don't mean to cut you off. And that's one of the comments that was made by family and friends is that, oh, you cut these people off. This is I can get to the heart of your question
you
and move
fine.
Up. No, that's fine.
You're
so,
fine. It was me interrupting. Go ahead.
No, that's fine. And I understand what you're saying. I just try to cut down to the core of the question. So sounds like you set the debt off with whatever instrument you use, and then they reported it as income, and now you don't want it to be reported as income. That's the Internal Revenue Service job. Their job is to keep commerce in check. They're the bookkeepers of commerce of this country, and they're not a bad corporation. People just don't understand them. I mean, if you have income and you're in business, and you should be in some form of business, or you're employed with some company that has business, there's things that has to be reported so commerce can be balanced. So you can't set off if they gave you $100 in debt through a discharge, you have to pay that tax if you're engaged in commerce. If you're having intercourse in commerce and they sent it to your bureau, that means you utilize their Social Security number. That means you utilize some system of commerce, and they're reporting that to the Internal Revenue Service, who is the bookkeepers of commerce. So your question is, how can I turn that around? Well, you said that they set it off. They forgave it. So would you rather pay on that $100 $0.20 or $20 on the $100, or would you had rather pay the debt collector the full $100? With the IRS, they're just going to, based on your status and based on your bracket of taxing, they're going to assess whatever penalty or whatever fee or whatever percentage you must pay on the fact that the debt collector or whoever it was settled that debt, discharged that debt. So you're still in a better position by paying a percentage based on your bracket as opposed to paying $100 to the debt collector. So if your question is how do I reverse that, I don't know. If you owed the debt, then you owe the tax. If you played in, if you had intercourse commercially, then you owe the money. See, we can't be of the mindset that we can go and execute these contracts, have evidence of those contracts. The Internal Revenue Service have evidence of those contracts. And then we want to eliminate the debt and eliminate the tax through what? If you don't want to play, we can't play the game, Mother. We can't play the game. You can't be in the country and have minimum contact, the way my hosts say, and have driver's license and have jobs and have EIN numbers and Social Security numbers and everything else, and then say that you're sovereign and you don't want to play the game. You got to stay out the game. Priest, add to that, because I want to make sure I'm giving it in the right spirit.
You want me to add to it? Or you?
I want the
else.
Priest to add to it, Alicia.
Oh, okay.
Yes, a lot of times that, you know, people say that they are sovereign or that you have to learn how to separate yourself from your fiction.
And if you don't know how to separate yourself from your fiction, because I don't care what you do, you're going to use that fiction in commerce. If you get a cell phone bill, if you get a utility bill, if you have a car payment, a mortgage, if you're going to buy something off a credit card from Office Depot, Home Depot, you are in commerce. You are in business. And you have to learn how to understand that you are a divine spirit, and you have to learn how to operate your trust, your straw man, whatever they want to call it, your enligus. You have to learn how to take control of your name. Because I'm going to explain to you, when you go back to the story of Jacob and Esau, one of them had to understand the power of the birthrights. So Esau didn't want his birthrights, which means he didn't want his name. He wanted to work out in the field. By definition, field means he wanted to work out in commerce. Go look up the word field, and you'll run into the word commerce, business. He was always doing business. He didn't care about his birthrights. So you got to learn how to understand your birthrights, which is your name, which is your titles that you need to basically take control of, so you'll know how to honor, keep yourself in honor out here in commerce. I love the IRS. The IRS is not a bad corporation. You can forget about it. Once you learn how to operate with the IRS will
That's
fight
right.
for you and shut
That's
stuff
right.
down. Trust me.
That's right.
When you learn how to operate with the gatekeeper, go back to the – I've always been quoting these movies because people think that those movies are just movies, but those movies are telling you how to conduct yourself out in the real world, and that this world is based off of fiction. The word matrix is inside of the Bible 5 times, and Yahweh said, for those who escape the matrix is my firstborn. So you got to know who you are. Go back in, understand that you, when you enter, Neo had to enter to the matrix. When he was in part one, he had always run from the agents. Stop running from these agents. Stop running from stuff. You have to learn how to agree. Understand the agreement you put yourself into. You didn't run when you signed for that cell phone. You didn't run when you signed up for that car. You didn't run when you signed up for that student loan. You didn't run when you took that mortgage off that house. So why are you running now? You have to learn how to agree. Go into those contracts, come into an agreement with the IRS, pay that little whatever you need to pay, and learn how to recoup and get back what you put out. Get them folks that money, and then you learn how to apply the correct tax forms to the IRS so they can cut you a check. See, that's your problem.
That's right.
You don't know how to recoup what you're putting out. Everything you're giving out is energy. Go learn how to go get your energy. You're putting it out. The IRS, like Sheree said, the IRS is a balance. They're bringing balance to you, your account. You have to learn how to balance your books. You know the bank always tell you, you need to balance your books. So learn how to balance your account. Stop letting your straw man run all over the place, and you don't have control of it. Know what you're signing, know why you're signing, and know how to collect your energy back from these different corporations that you're giving it to in the first place. I turn the floor back over to you, Brother Sharif.
Peace, sister. I mean, excellent. I can't. And trust me, like I said, I get, again, the priest is teaching me balance spiritually. I get a little bit sideways when I hear the word set off and discharge, because I know you're not speaking of that in the context of a bankruptcy discharge or set off based on you suing some debt collector or creditor for some offset of the balance of what you owe based on some violations they may have committed. So pay your tax. If you're utilizing their name, you got to pay them. If you're utilizing their number that was assigned to you, you got to pay them. If you know how to work the system will work perfectly for you, and the system can be used because you're going to use it. And as my co-hosts say, you have to start knowing how to work in the private and start handling your matters privately. And once we learn that, then we have to clear up these contracts that we have out there. Pay that $20, sister, whatever. The IRS, you know, your president had a mortgage forgiveness program. I believe it was extended throughout this year to where all your mortgage-related tax 1099s were forgiven. I believe that's still going on throughout the year. But, you know, after that, we have to learn. And I'll say this lastly before I let you go. The new contracts that these creditors and these bankers have, they've tightened up their game. What are you going to do? Not you, but everybody. What are you going to do with the new contracts, the new mortgage language, with the new debt collector language? Do you not think they're planning and changing laws as we go on so they can gain more control of us through debt? Do you really think that some of us are not going to go right back out there and spend that money and get loans and get credit cards and not read those agreements? Those agreements are I've seen them. All the holes that was in these agreements, all the assignments and the mortgage language and the deceptions, all of that is done. We're in 2014. Take a look at the new contracts and see if you're not waiving more of your rights, and you're not going to have the ability to say anything when you default. So we have to get smart. We do have to learn private ways of dealing with things. We do have to learn different alternative means of currency, and we have to clear up these debts that we willfully participated in, and we have to clear up the intercourse that we've had with these creditors and debt collectors, and we have to make them pay where we can make them pay. And where we can't make them pay, we have to pay and learn to do better next time. God bless, sister. I hope that helps, and we'll see you next week. Thank you. All right, let's go to – let me make sure I'm getting my people that's been holding a long time. All right, let's go to – I got a 40-minute hold here. Where is it? Where is it? Where is it? All right, let's go to 78. Oh, that's my co-host I was looking for, 678-0935. Is that the illustrious Brother Latif?
Good day. Good afternoon. Peace and blessings.
Peace and blessings, brother.
Well, I'm glad you got the priest on there because he's smoking. He's hot.
Ain't he hot? Ain't he hot, Lati?
Yeah, he's hot. I love to go into the books and draw from it because people don't realize, or maybe they do realize, that the spiritual books only talk about the present. The stories of the past are things that replicate themselves. And what we have to figure out is how is it replicating itself in our time, okay? And that's why they become a guide to us, because they're telling us that these stories will be repeated from generation to generation. Now, he said something very prophetic. He says that study the books of Joshua and Exodus, and that's my trigger, because Exodus is a book, as it illustratively talks about, is leaving the system, okay? Exodus, getting out of one system and establishing your own. So I'm going to ask the priest, because we're looking at this dismal carnage of people being wiped out, bamboozled, disenfranchised, usurped. What is the plan for Exodus? Well, how does he see there can be an Exodus, or are we just condemned to be in this world of demons and warlocks and witches?
Good question.
All right. Good question. Good question. Shalom, King. Love you, brother. Yahweh bless you and all your travels and everything that you do and you put your hands on, you know. So people, when they get into the word Exodus, Exodus is three words put together. It's Exodus. It means exiting out of the dust. And you have to understand how to come from the dust of the earth, because Satan was cast to the dust of the earth and he had to eat the dust of the earth all the days of his life. So when you begin to understand what type of doctrine that you're eating every day, then you'll understand how to come out of this matrical system. Again, Yahweh said, for those who escape the matrix is my firstborn. So look up the word escape. The word escape will teach you how to come out of this matrix world and still operate within it. Neo was able to go inside the matrix at will. When you begin to learn how to get rid, remember Smith, shot him and killed him, right, in the first one. And he had to do what? He gave up running from the system. And when Trinity kissed him, which means she blew the breath of life into him, he became a living soul. So when he went back inside the matrix, he was able to tell the matrix to do what? Stop. That means every fiery arrow, that means every word that they're shooting at you negatively, you were able to stop it because you understood it. It was not real. When you begin to understand this is just an illusion, this is just a deception, because Revelation chapter 12, verse 9 says Satan deceived the whole world. And there goes the word D-E in front of the word deceive. When you begin to understand the power of words, then you'll be able to come out of any system without any problems. You'll be able to apply John chapter 8, verse 32, ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. And the reason why the word T is in front of the word truth, because you use a T-square in mathematics, which means you have to stand 90 degrees upright again. The T means truth, and the word roof is inside of the word truth. And when you understand how to exit yourself from one thing into another, because that's what Ruth did. She followed her mother-in-law Naomi, and she began to follow the laws of Yahweh. She was able to come from a strange mind, doing strange things, into the correct way of life. And I could go on and on and on how to get you out of this system spiritually, and how to deal with the system on a spiritual basis. You can still operate in this system. That's crazy. You don't have a driver's license. You need a driver's license. You got to know what to put on your driver's license. It's okay to have these things. You got to learn how to read these contracts before you go into these contracts, so you'll be able to govern yourself accordingly out here in commerce. There's nothing wrong with having a license. There's nothing wrong with having these things. You got to learn how to navigate yourself in the laws of commerce, period. So,
let me ask you, in light of Brother Latif's question, to get out the system, it sounds like we don't need to get out the system. We need to know how to operate and have intercourse within the system. But let me say this, that sounds complicated, and I hate double talk, and it sounds to me like double speak. So we know these contracts exist in favor of the creditors. And if we don't agree with that contract, this is what my thought would be. We don't need to buy that house if we have to buy it on credit. If you're dealing right, and you're taking the information that's on the show, you should be able to relieve yourself of many of those debts. And once you relieve yourself of those debts, what are you going to do with that property that you now own? What are you going to do when that debt collector is not able to sue you for that $50,000 or that $100,000? What are you doing with it? This is why I say alternative currency, and this is why I say you should be purchasing your home. You should be doing things, not living beyond our means. I think we just fell into the marketing hype. I think we've been by the national media institutions. We seem to think that we have to have $250 sneakers on. We think our kids have to have $500 jeans on. We fell for the nonsense. I remember growing up, Latif, and maybe you could too. And I just had this thought when I was preparing for my show, and I usually circle my living room and circle, and the spirit just speaks to me. I remember when I used to go to the store as a kid for my aunts and my mother. And when I think about debt, I remember my mother used to have an account at the corner store. And she used to send me with a note, okay, and I didn't grow up wealthy. And she used to send me with a note and used to say, go down to the store, take this note, and he's going to give you a gallon of milk or some Jiffy cornmeal or whatever it is. And I would go down with a note from my mother, and the man with the owner of the store would open up the book to my mother's name, and he used to write in there $2 or whatever the milk was. Well, it was 99 cents. I remember a gallon of milk was 99 cents, and he used to write it down, and my mother would pay him on the following week when she got paid. And a lot of people had credit down at the store. No promissory notes, no three-part contracts, no signatures, no notaries, no nothing. I remember my aunt was sending me down there when I was a kid, and you were able to go down there 18 years old and be like, go down there and give them my name, and you could get a pack of Newport 100s and get a book of matches. I remember those days without contracts, and the store held the credit. And they paid. And I don't remember, I don't even remember if there was a court back then. I didn't know of it, okay? I didn't know what a court was. So, I mean, what has changed? What has changed is that we have decided that we have to keep up with the Joneses. We have to live beyond our means. We need an 8-bedroom house. We need a Mercedes-Benz 2014. If we're that frail and we don't have the spiritual foundation and we can't live comfortably, I think this is our problem, Latif. I think coming out of the system is going to always be there. We're not going to always have it. Because, listen, what do they do, Brother Latif? Okay, say they can't get all the real property, okay? They put out this currency. They print the money free, okay? And then they make us slaves to the currency. All right. So then when they want to get the property back, they start calling the loans due, or they start playing with the real property values, and now your property is not worth anything. So the $300,000 property you have is not worth $200,000. So do we keep the properties and try to hold on to it, or do we sell it and get all the money we can and put our economic resources into something else, or buying a home that's a little bit smaller? I really struggle with the answer. And it's a very good question that has certain fluidity and dynamic to what the remedy may be. I think it all depends on our spirituality. What is enough for us? Do we have to have that big car?
Well, I can I didn't mean to cut you off, brother.
No, sure, brother. Go ahead.
The secret is in when it says line upon line, line upon line, precept upon precept upon precept, a little here and a little there. That's what the scriptures that we have all have forgotten in the book. You always said you have to do it little bit by little bit. And just like you said, you stop trying to get an 8-bedroom house, start out with a 10-bedroom house. All these different foreigners that come to this country, man, 20, 30 of them live in a 2-bedroom house. And next thing you know, 2 or 3 years, they own their entire community because they do it little bit by little bit every day. They don't try to look at all of the stuff that they see on TV, and they're looking at all these different reality shows and different programs that's programming your mind to believe that you need this 8, 10, 15-bedroom house, 4-car garage with 12 cars in your yard, 100 pair of sneakers in your closet, 50,000 dresses. We have been programmed to believe that we need all of these things when you just need your basic essentials that Yahweh bless you with, you know. So it's always line upon line, precept upon precept, a little here and a little there. This is what the ants do. The secret also is in the book of Proverbs. If you want to understand how to get out of this system and deal with this system, Proverbs chapter 6, verse 6 through 10 says, go study the ant, O thou sluggard, and learn of her ways, and be wise, who knows how to gather her food in the harvest. So ants gather everything little bit by little bit. And they all work together, and they all work in a line.
Right.
And when they go back to that ant hole, they all in a straight line, and they bring it little bit by little bit to the ant hole. So I always refer back to the Bible because I apply the Bible to my life, and I have grown whatever type of business that I want to build. I use all of the concepts and the precepts of that Bible, and I'm always successful. This is why I teach on the spiritual aspect of how to utilize this Bible when you're in commerce. And when you begin to utilize the book of Exodus, like T said, and the book of Joshua, you'll know how to handle yourself in commerce without a shadow of doubt. Like you said, you don't have to leave the system. You got to know how to navigate in the system. Moses never pulled the people out of, he just pulled them out of, physically out of Egypt, but he taught them when they came over to the Jordan how to operate out without Egypt. On a path to where they still had to deal with commerce, they still had to deal with other nations, they still had to do business. That's why you have to go back and read and study and spiritualize what was going on. And I'm going to tell you, when you go back and read the book of Solomon, he dealt with the UCC law. He dealt with contract law. So, man, if they want to get deep into the book, I can really open up the eye to a lot of stuff that they think wasn't going on thousands of years ago. Yes, it was. It was totally going on. Matter of fact, they had it before we did.
Great. All right, I'm going to go to another call. Let's try to get a few callers in here because I know there's a lot of people that wait 6 days in between my show to get some answers to their needed questions. So I'm going to leave both of you gentlemen lines open. I'm going to come back to you. Let's go to 202. You've been waiting 48 minutes. 202-7781. You're on High Frequency Radio. Appreciate your patience. What's your question?
Peace to everybody on the call.
Peace, brother.
All right. I called in yesterday, Sharif. You had mentioned a name, Janet Yellen, I believe. And
yes.
Also I think it was in reference to Bitcoin. And then the other
yes,
gentleman
sir.
Just brought it up, so I just felt compelled to call in and bring it up again.
Okay.
If you haven't, check out on Facebook. I posted on Yusuf's page. My name is David Michael. but on Facebook I'm Constantine Love. So look on there. I posted something, and it's a pretty good talk. It's about 2 hours, so just make sure you got the time. And
okay.
I think it's in pretty deep. It's in very decent info. I think you'll appreciate it, for real.
Man, brother, I love you, man. I appreciate you calling in and offering that information. I heard you. I heard you as well as the other brothers.
I just wanted to recap.
Oh, man, I love it. I love it. That's what scientists do. That's what real healers do, man.
Exactly.
When we hear what our leaders need some information. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah, exactly,
I appreciate that. Yes. And the reason I brought that up is because, you know, I hear a lot. I have a lot of friends across this country, and I'm hearing about places like Arizona that has gold dispensaries that are now using gold. And I'm hearing about this, and I'm just like, man, I heard Louisiana and many other states is now utilizing gold and getting away from the FRNs, the Federal Reserve Notes, and the currency. So, you know, it's a lot of things to that. And I think with my show being about debt, I have to start talking about what's going to happen after we're able to deal with those debt and relinquish ourselves and what we're going to use. Well, maybe we don't want to play in this system. There are other systems. There are other private alternatives that Brother Youssef will tell you about. There are other private ways of having commerce that doesn't have all those restraints and all those loopholes, and I appreciate you sharing
restraints, loopholes. Yes, and I would also like to include how I look at it is, I appreciate a person's time, and quite frankly, I'm going to say this, is that I see the most creativity coming, one, mostly out of the hood. That's where all the hottest dances come out. So if I can channel those energies from them young cats and the young girls and put that in to say something like 3D printing, introduce that, you know, at a very subtle, maybe on iPad at first, and then a bigger software, and then maybe going on to actually working your way around how can I make this house even better, you know. There was a house that was built in Pensacola, Florida, that was complete. It withstood the worst hurricane. Everyone else's house was terrible, but the fact that it was shaped just like a mountain in a way, you know.
Wow.
But smooth, and it was contraptilized with a 3D printer. So, I mean, that just makes sense if you talk about community-wise and all that, and definitely what the cat said on manufacturing. I have an idea, you have an idea. I don't want to be giving out this energy to someone else because they have completely different intent. You know, I love that. And I want to say one more thing real fast, Brother Yahshua. I would, if he could, come back on the phone just so for the record I can get it. I can't write it down right now because I'm actually in transit, but I'd like to get his email or something because I would like to at least knock on the door 3 times because I want to enter that circle, man. You know,
doorpost4@gmail.com. Doorpost4@gmail.com. Wherever you hear the king, as he refers to me as, you're going to hear the priest, because I'm telling you, it has to. The information I deliver is raw. It is sushi, so you have to have some spiritual something to clear your palate once I give you the raw. And the priest definitely does that, and me does a hell of a job, like I'm telling you. And very meek and humble. He talks, you know, I mean, most people, you know, the national media make stars out of people that have created destruction, whether it's a bank, whether it's George Zimmerman, or anybody. They make stars. Yeah. They make them rich. And we have to this individual here, and the priest has been through the fire, and he's not rich because he don't want to be rich, but he is rich, richer than any one of those guys, than any billionaire. So
definitely, man, that's
spirituality. Now you see why I got to have him there. And I haven't talked to him in a week or so. When I called him, he said, Sharif, you're depleted. I said, brother, I am. I've been dealing with a lot of frustration personally, occupationally, trying to help the people, trying to wake the people, trying to wake the people up. It's a lot of work. Latif would know that. Everybody would have idea of that if you're parents. You know, it's depleting when you're dealing with these debt issues and these devils. So, brother, I appreciate you, man. I thank you for coming on the call. And it's not, you know, our people, man, we just honors to our people. There's some great people, and then there's some people that have the ability to be great, man. Just phenomenal. And one thing our priest always said to me while he was going through the situation with the state of Georgia, he said that a lot of the people in his circle had turned his back on him. This is how I reached out to him. This is what
I heard.
He said,
I heard.
My people. I don't care. Those are my people. I love them, and I'm not going to turn my back on them, although they had turned their back on him. Now, let me tell you something. I don't think I could have did that, and I want to get to the point where I'm able to, because that will definitely take me to another level. So thanks for your call, brother. I'm going to try to get on to these other calls. Peace and blessings to you. All right. Let's go to 908-1375, 908-1375. Do you have a question?
Hello, Brother Sherrod. I was just asking, how do I get on your email list?
Okay, brother, you need to speak up a little bit. There's a lot of background noise, and I really cannot hear you. Are you there?
Yes, hold on. Hello?
Yes, sir.
Yes, I was just calling to find out, how do I get on your email list?
Email list is staff, STAFF, at consumer, consumer-law.com. So it's staff at consumerlaw.com.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, brother. Peace. All right. Let's go to my 58-minute hold questionnaire. 321-7357. Appreciate your patience. You're on High Frequency Radio. Do you have a question?
Yes. How y'all doing, brothers?
Doing well, brother. Peace and blessings.
Peace. Well, this is the second time I hear the show. I got into the show from Brother Jonah Bay. I went to his seminar that weekend, last weekend on Tampa.
Okay.
So he told about your show. But basically, I don't want to take too much of your time. I'm just trying to get contact with any Boricuas that know this information, you know what I'm saying, so I can get it in Spanish as much as, you know, I'm good with English, but I was born in Borinquen, you know what I'm saying? And I called yesterday, and brother said he was going to call me back, never did, but I know he's busy. But maybe you can let them know, or maybe you have some people that speaks, Spanish, and they're born in Borinquen, so I can
pass
this information.
Yeah, man. Listen. This is why I'm bringing together, bridging the gap between cultures, white, black, green, purple, because everybody out there is slaves to this economic system, and you are absolutely right. My network, and I will definitely bring that forward. I need to have some more people that, and a lot of you Boricuans have been calling. So, you know, this information affects you too. I think I'm going to make an effort to make sure I have someone of that descent in my classes, my student classes, so they are able to learn and disseminate that information to your culture. And I appreciate you calling in. Although there's somewhat of a language barrier, I know it is easier for you to be able to hear that out of someone with your native tongue, and we'll definitely make an effort to do that, man. But I will definitely put that information out. You sound like a brother that will be a good student for my class. You sound well-spoken. And why don't you just email me, and I'll invite you to be one of the students of my class, and you can learn that information and be able to take it to your society. That's what we're all about here. We're bridging gaps. You understand what I mean? Because y'all got to learn it just like we do.
Can I ask for a favor, brother?
Sure.
Right now I'm driving. And legal term, I'm driving because I'm a truck driver right now. You know what I'm saying? Hold on.
Oh, you are driving. Yeah, you are driving. Right.
All right.
Okay, I got your number right here. I want you to focus on the road, brother, because I got family out there too, and you probably got a big truck. But I got your number here. I'm going to text you my email address.
Thank you.
And so you'll be able to get
in
touch with me. All right, brother? Peace. Love you,
man.
Thanks for tuning in.
All right, brother.
All right. All right, let's see. Let's go to 41 minutes holding. Let's go to 469-6123. 469-6123. You're on High Frequency Radio. Do you have a question?
Yeah, what's up, Brother Sharif? You doing all right today?
I'm doing great, brother. How are you?
I'm good. Hey, man, I wanted to know, do you guys have any groups here in Texas, like in the Dallas-Fort Worth area?
Let me see. I think I received an email from somebody wanting to form a Texas group. I got your number here. Let me look at it. Let me see. I don't know anybody offhand. I do know someone that expressed an interest to do so, but I will definitely try to find you one. Right now, man, just join any one of the groups. Like I have a New York group. If you would email me at staff@consumer-law.com, I'll put you with any group. But, yeah, you do need to be with a group in Texas because your laws are differently. Your federal laws are the same, but your state consumer protection laws are different. But you can always rely on those federal laws. So, you know, just get with a group right now, and then you be the one that formulates a Texas group and put together a collective body that's going to do what needs to be done in that state. And that's a great state, man. Texas is a very good state.
Yeah, I wanted to get in a position and get around some people who know, you know what, that way I can learn, and I would eventually like to start my own group. But right now, like
okay.
I say, man, you know, I'm just into this. So, you know, hey, I need to learn more.
Absolutely. Well, we all do. And, brother, look, I still learn. I don't know it all. The priest, Brother Latif, we always learn. And this thing is fluid and dynamic, man. It always changes. Like I said, you know, everything, all these beatings that these banks and debt collectors are taking, do not think they're not lobbying on Congress right now to change a lot of those laws. They are. And that's what they're going to continue to do. So even though we learn what we learn today, tomorrow it may not be effective. Okay? We have to continue learning. But we have to continue to maintain spiritual balance so that we can deal with any change that comes about. So I have your number here, brother. I'll be in touch with you, the email address, try to connect you with somebody in or near you so you to be able to advance your knowledge. All right?
All right, brother. Peace. I'll send you an email on your email address. Thank you.
Thank you, man. Peace. Thanks for showing up. All right. Let's go to True American Original. You're on High Frequency Radio. Do you have a question? True American Original, do you have a question? All right, let's go to 412-1568. 412-1568, you're on High Frequency Radio. Do you have a question?
Yes, I do. I'd like to probably have one for yourself and probably for the priest. The priest is still on.
All right.
My first question, I guess, would be to yourself, and I hope I'm not one of the individuals asking the same question because I believe I spoke to you last week and we had got cut off. And one of the questions
okay.
I was asking you was dealing with this regentrification of these properties in the hood, the ghetto, whatever you want to call it. And you were correct when you said, you know, pay your taxes, and one should do that. But basically what's happening with some of these properties, they're really trying to tear them down while they're sitting there. But what's happening, they're over-assessing them to other areas that are really better than that ghetto area. And they're charging like these crazy fees for these attorneys that have these here debt collect that has a debt at that particular time. And my question would be, I heard you say that a debt collector cannot charge interest. Now, that is correct, because sometimes the interest in their fees exceeds the tax. So that's becoming a problem. Say if an individual that lives in that community wants to buy some of these properties, and these debt collectors have it at that time. They say the debt is, say, $1,000. But the fees that the attorneys are putting on there for interest and everything, it might be an additional $3,000. Now, if an individual wants to get that property, take that property, are those fees legitimate fees for a piece of paper sitting in a file cabinet?
Okay. Now, I don't know what you're speaking of. I don't know if you're speaking about a tax obligation. Because if you're speaking of a tax obligation, then if they purchase your tax liability, they can charge interest and fees on top of that. So you mentioned tax and then you mentioned debt. Those are both of those are obligations, but I have to know whether you're talking about a tax obligation. No, a debt buyer cannot charge interest on top of that. That contract had ceased when you stopped participating into it. But, you know, a tax sale or tax certificate, yes, you can charge interest and fees on top of that tax until that tax is paid. So I don't know, because it seems like you were speaking about them as in a one and the same type way. Are you speaking of a tax, or are you speaking of a debt or debt collection?
Okay. What happens is with these taxes, it's assigned to a debt collector. And the debt collector at that point starts charging interest on the, say it's $1,000, okay? But that interest, after a couple years and their fees exceed what is owed on the tax, because you can't go to the city or county and say, I want to pay for 2010, 2011, 2012. They said it's not our tax no more. You got to pay the debt collector. So the question would be, if it's assigned to them, or they bought that debt for pennies on a dollar, are they allowed to charge interest on that debt?
Okay, let me answer that question in this way. The same routine that a debt collector acquires debt is not the same way that a tax certificate purchaser acquires that tax. They pay the full amount of your tax. They don't get a break on that. If you owe $5,000 in taxes, they actually pay the $5,000, because you're going to pay that tax to the state. Your taxes go for whatever they go for in the state. Excuse me?
That's not the case. You get a letter saying, we're a debt collector. You got 30 days to answer the debt, or we assume that it's yours. So they're a debt collector.
Okay. All right. Well, let me explain to you why they're a debt collector. Let me explain to you why they're a debt collector, brother, and I understand your energy, but let me give you the answer and some guidance. They're a debt collector because they're collecting the debt that the state said that you owe. The state could be wrong. The state could not have the tax. The state could have assessed that tax erroneously. So they're collecting, although they purchased that tax, I don't know. Like, if you tell me, when you go to a tax sale, I know people that purchase properties from a tax sale. If you owe $2,000, you don't buy it $200. You buy it for the amount of the tax. They actually pay your tax, and then they're able to charge you fees and interest on top of that tax. And that's why the state rids themselves of the tax obligation, so they can go and you know, I guess, replenish your communities, your schools, and things of that nature. So they're going to say they're a debt collector because they didn't initiate that debt. You didn't get credit from them. You got it from the state. So if they bought that $5,000, they paid $5,000 for your tax, and they charge interest and fees on top of that until you satisfy that amount. That's my understanding of it. Latif, maybe you can tell me something different, but that's how I understand about tax sales. Now, a debt collector will buy your debt for pennies on the dollar.
Okay, that's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, we're talking about a tax sales.
Right.
No, it's not a tax sale. The debt has been assigned to them. Okay.
Okay.
It's not a tax sale. It hasn't went to sheriff's sale with somebody went there and bought it. It's not a tax sale. Once it's 90 days past due, what they're doing is they're assigning that debt to this debt collector. Now, when you send a debt collection letter to them and ask them, did you purchase this debt for pennies on a dollar, or was it assigned to you? So when it's assigned to them, when they purchase it, like pennies on a dollar, what they're doing, they're charging 22% interest on $1,000. So if it goes past 3 years, the interest has exceeded the assignment or what they purchased it for pennies on a dollar.
All right, now I see what you're saying. So they've come up with a different method. Maybe some of the lawyers and the legal minds got together and said, okay, instead of having these tax sales, which all of the tax certificates are not being bought and the state is without money, somebody went to the tax, to the state, and said, well, look, I'm an attorney group. Why don't you assign the debt to me? Let me see if I can collect the tax from the taxpayer, and then we can assess 22%, which is without putting up the money, buying the tax certificate, I can make 22% on the signing of debt. So in that case, yes, you would treat them similarly to how you would treat a debt collector. But look, if you owe the state that much money, it becomes a little bit more difficult because, you know, sure, you can prove that a debt collector that you don't owe that debt or that there's some miscalculation of that debt. But with that tax and them not buying the tax certificate, where are you going to get the validation from the state? The state's going to say, listen, you had the property, you owned it between this date and this date. You owe the tax. Are you saying you don't owe the tax? You follow what I mean? So you send them a debt validation dispute, and they go back to the state, and they say, well, state, can you look up his debt? I mean, many times they can just look at it online, brother. They can go online and see how much you owe in your tax assessment. What I always tell people is this. You can have a lot of fun with many people, but your state and your Internal Revenue Service. Pay them your due and then learn how to not have that tax liability. But the tax is going to be difficult for you to fight. I'm not saying it's impossible. There are people out there that is successful at doing so. But it's going to be a difficult thing. And I understand that these collection firms are probably charging 22% interest. They're going to do that. But this is what I also have to say. I know many people that don't pay their mortgage payment, that don't want to pay a dollar for education, that don't want to pay their taxes. They don't want to pay anything. You're going to have to pay somebody. And you know, and if I was to make a decision who I would pay, I would go on and pay my taxes until I acquired enough information or until I acquired the knowledge to be able to exempt myself from that tax, if possible. But I'm going to pay that tax because you're going to have an uphill battle trying to determine that or make them believe that you don't owe it. So, brother, with that, all I would say is that if you're not making payments on your mortgages, which a lot of us are not, and for good reason sometimes, at least pay your tax and get that off your back so you don't have that to deal with. Pay your insurance. Pay your insurance and pay your tax.
Only thing I'm saying is that what is owed to the county and the city is not a problem paying that. Okay, if it's $1,000 that's back debt to them, that's no problem paying that. But if this debt collection, this third party debt collector say, well, not only do you owe the $1,000, you owe us an additional $3,500 in fees. Now the tax to the county and the city, I believe that's legitimate. There's no problem paying that, okay? But when these third-party debt collectors are tripling the face value of what the alleged debt is, then that's a problem on that side. Because some of these properties we want to buy, but we can't buy them because the third-party debt collector is saying this is owed. And what happens is these properties sit in our communities and nobody does anything to them, and what they do is they tear the house down and they get zero.
Right. Well, brother, you need to look at the usury laws in your state, one. Two, you need to pay the tax if at all possible. But, you know, if it went to tax sale, I believe that the purchase of the tax certificates charges somewhere upwards of 20 to 22% anyway. So, I mean, I think you're going to be faced that if you don't pay the tax. And I understand that there might be some conspiracy to decimate black neighborhoods or predominantly black neighborhoods through raising the interest rate and fees so high so that you don't pay it. I understand that. In that regard, my brother, then you have to form a strategy of your own and figure out where they might be exceeding the usury laws or where we can find where they're probably doing something against the consumer protection laws. But as long as you have the state in bed with doing this, look, that's commerce, and they're going to find a way to make money. And if you're not able to pay the tax, and I understand what you're doing, I have a picture of what you're doing. You're trying to buy up these properties, and they're just raising it. But, brother, if it's a win-win for you that even if you pay another couple of thousand for the property, but the property is worth $10,000, $20,000, then, you know, give Caesar that due and then not be in that position the next time. You follow what I mean?
Okay. That's cool. And
all right, brother.
A question to the priest, if I can.
Okay, go ahead.
Priest, I enjoy what you're saying, and Sharice, I greatly appreciate you bringing this brother on. But when you're talking about balance, I'm thinking of a car battery when you're saying positive and negative, positive and negative. And when you say currency, I'm seeing that as like electricity. And when you're talking about Moses taking his rod and hitting on the ground and everything being grounded. So when you speak about, you know, balance and everything, I'm basically seeing like, you know, basically an electrical charge, you know, for everything to balance out, because you need like the positive and you need the negative for things to be right. And from my understanding, it seems like you're saying we're so out of balance, that's why we're having these problems in our lives. I don't know if that's what you're saying. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but if that is, I greatly appreciate that. And say your email one more time if you have it.
Okay, I'll let the priest answer, but it's doorpost, DOORPOST, 4, the number 4, at gmail.com. And priest, if you can quickly in 15 seconds kind of address what the brother was saying.
That's totally correct. When we begin to study the words, you have to take these words from a physical point and learn how to spiritualize these words so you can be able to understand every word inside that Bible to apply it today in your life. You have to give what belongs to Caesar, Caesar, and give what belongs to Yahweh, He is. You have to separate yourself physically as a living man and begin to let your illegals operate in commerce. You're going to have to learn how to use the IRS for your advantage and stop running from the IRS. They are your friend. They are not your enemy.
Peace. Peace. Thank you, brother. Keep up the good work, man, and I appreciate what you're doing, man, and trying to buy up some of these communities because you know the value. Keep up what you're doing. If we can help, we're here for you. Peace.
All right.
Let's go to 615. 615-9983, you're on High Frequency Radio. Do you have a question?
Yes, I do, Brother Sharif. This is Brother Terry out of the Tennessee Territory. And I've actually purchased your series, and I was having the codec issues, and I talked to the company about that, and they said to get with you on that. But I'll get with you at a different time. But I do have a question regarding a student loan that has come up that I'm thinking about applying some of your strategies to regarding the statute of limitation, because it kind of looked like it was back in when I attended college back in 92 in that time. At any rate, I got a letter saying that they were looking at possibly, it's the Tennessee Student Assistance Corporation, they were looking at possibly suspending my license if I don't bring the account current. And I was kind of like confused about what loan they were talking about, because I did get one recently to go into teaching, but that wasn't a loan. That was kind of like a grant or a scholarship based on me working after I got my accreditation. After I got everything, I could work that off, things of that nature. So I was kind of like, but no, that can't be that, because I just got finished with that, so that wouldn't be in the play. So I called them, and it was actually something totally different back in when I went to college. And when I first went to college, I didn't even get certified to teach, so I was wondering how can they come in and try to get my license suspended when that particular loan wasn't for the licensures. So I called a lady, talked to her, and she was like, well, we purchased a loan from Wells Fargo, blah, 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 blah. I said, well, I don't even recall getting that loan. Can you validate it? So she said, well, yeah, let me have the address, your address and whatnot, and I can send you over some information. So she sends over the information, and it's basically some copies of some contracts that looks like it has my signature on it from back then. But she said they purchased the loan from Wells Fargo. And then also I noticed on her documentation that was sent, it said that it was assigned to Tennessee Student Assistance Corporation from Sallie Mae Corporation and all that stuff. So I was kind of looking at, is there something I want to partake in, by looking at having it, because I see that they're not the original creditors, so they're debt collectors from that standpoint, so not paying them, but also I don't want them to go into, like in the 90 days, go into possibly trying to suspend my licensures, which I use, you know, for my for teaching.
All right,
right
I got
now.
Your question, brother. I mean, and this is an interesting question, and I only have 10 minutes left in the show, and I'm definitely next show I'm going to talk about that, because Brother Latif and Alicia, I'm seeing a lot where these these corporations are banding together to try to prevent you from exercising rights, not privileges, that one has. And I've seen a lot of that to where, you know, they're going to suspend this license over a debt. Like, what does the DMV has to do with a debt? I don't care if it's an IRS debt. I don't care if it's a bank debt. I mean, what is this thing going on where they're now attacking, and I've heard debt collectors call people and say, we're going to put you in jail, we're going to suspend your driver's license, we're going to turn up your electric, we're going to make sure you... Well, I mean, what is this to where these debt collectors are able to...
Uh-huh. Let me tell you real quick. It's not a license just to drive. It's actually a teacher professional license, but I teach school.
Oh,
and
okay.
And they're codified to, you know, to actually, the verbiage in the code says they can promulgate that you haven't paid it, it's in default, and they'll recommend that your license be suspended.
Okay. That clears me up. So, brother, you just need to use your consumer protection laws, and if Wells Fargo's purchased that debt, they are a third-party debt collector, and you need to treat them as if you treat anyone else. Now, if you have some sort of language in your contract that says that if you receive credit or you receive an education from this system and you have to make sure you pay for that education, and as a result of that education you acquired a license that allows you to work, then, yeah, I can see where, you know, they can say, well, listen, I mean, you got that license based on this loan, so we're going to pull that license. If you say that language
right.
in the contract, just try to make an agreement with them, brother. Stay honorable.
I got
try
you.
To make an agreement with them. Pay them $20, $30, whatever it is. Offer them something, but don't put your family in a bad position
exactly.
by doing so. Offer
exactly.
them something. And pay it off. You know, the other route is if you wanted to do, you can consult a bankruptcy attorney or preparer. There's a lot of times with those student loans I've had people that's called, and my bankruptcy preparer is probably one of the best out there, where he can go into bankruptcy and get discharged a lot of that interest and fees, not the loan, but the interest and fees, which is a good bulk of that debt. And if you're able to acquire
mm-hmm.
that, then that helps you a lot, too. So consider both of those. Email me. I'll send you some information on that.
Okay. Yeah, the only reason I was looking into that from that standpoint is because that particular one, it wasn't for the licensure. I just got my degree in psychology, and then,
okay.
you know, just use, you know, I didn't get certified to teach at that time. Then I got certification
right.
later on, which is the debt I thought they was talking about. And I was like, well, I don't even have to pay that one as long as I'm working in a system that I got the debt for.
Right.
That's why I was looking at. That's why I was looking at using some of your strategies and say, hey, you know what? Even though I may have done that, it's reaching statute limitations on it for you guys.
Okay, well, let's look at that. And then call me on the Kodak issue. You know, the Kodak was sent out because when I was using GoToMeeting, their webinars wasn't downloading an MP3, so they had a codec for certain computers. Like, it plays fine on my computer, it plays fine on many computers, and a lot of them has been ordered, but some computers don't play it, so the codec helps it play. But if you still have that issue, give me an email, because I had a gentleman, Vince White, who was able to transcribe a lot of my webinars into MP3 that didn't have that issue, and I might have that
okay.
webinar on MP3, okay?
Okay, I was able to play them, but I just had one that kind of got started in the middle of it.
Okay, yeah, send me that one, and that's probably the one that I had a lot of calls on, and I had transposed into an MP3, and that one plays fine. So let me know. All right, Brother Peace, thank you for your call. All right, we got 6 minutes left. I'm going to try to get the True American Original, who hit me on the chat and said, I'm here. True American Original, you're on High Frequency Radio. Do you have a question?
Yeah, but my question is based on, I want to make sure that I'm clear on some things. Okay, I'm going to run through this because I know we should find. Okay, I think it's a difference between a bill collector and a debt collector. Now, a bill comes from the people that you're getting the service from, correct?
Right.
Okay, now, from my studies of accounting, there's an uncollectible receivables account that and that's where a bill goes to when they're not able to collect the bill from who they're providing the service to, which makes it then a debt, and that's what's sold to the debt collector, correct?
I can understand you arriving to that point, yeah, okay.
Okay.
In accounting language, yeah.
Okay, now, an assignment comes from a creditor to someone
that's
else
right.
to collect that bill. Now, it's not an assignment when it's when a debt collector purchases a debt. Correct?
That's right. That's right.
Okay. We got that clear. Okay. The lawyer, when there's an exclusion for a lawyer in the FDCPA, that's pertaining to the validation, because I think what they're saying is that by a lawyer being a debt collector, they have a professional responsibility to make sure the debt is valid from the beginning, correct?
You're not going to find that, but I would say morally, yes. Professionally, yes, but that's going to be unfound.
Okay, now, the definition of the debt collector, it says anyone in the regular course of collecting a debt. Wouldn't that be with your job? Wouldn't that be like them collecting out of your paycheck for like health insurance, IRS? Aren't those like collections?
No, because I see where you're going, and you're very intellectual, and sometimes we with high intellectual minds, we kind of make things a little bit more complicated, or we think out the box, and sometimes that's good, and then sometimes it's not. No, you fill out forms at work saying that you're a taxpayer, so you contract with the Internal Revenue Service. You have a court judgment that comes across to your job and says, listen, you need to take this money out of this particular man's funds. They're not debt collectors. They have a court order. So, no, those necessarily would not put the employer in the place of a debt collector. They're executing something that you sign with your IRS forms. They ask you to fill them out. You willingly filled them out, and you created that contract, and they have those forms with your signature on, and you said, look, I have a contract with the IRS. Let them do what they do. And that's what they do. With the garnishment, they received a judgment from an order from a court saying to take your money. They're only doing what they're supposed to do. Let me tell you what does happen, that they can be in the middle or in some hot water. And I see this happen a lot. A lot of times they will have, let's say you owe the Internal Revenue Service some money, and the Internal Revenue Service will send something to the employer saying to take their money, okay? And it's not a warrant of distraint, okay, right, which they have to get, which is a court order, okay? That employer will be in hot water if he does that, because just you taking a letter from the Internal Revenue Service saying take my money out of my check is not enough. You have to go to the court and get a warrant of distraint and have a judge sign off on the fact that you can take my money. And a lot of employers have been sued, and I've seen plenty of cases where the Internal Revenue Service does that, and without the proper authorization or not following protocol or procedure, they will go ahead and take your money just because the IRS sent them a letter, and a lot of times the letter was defective. All right?
Okay. All right, and real quick, for the people who want to look for, like, getting into a group in their state, what I've done with a couple of people was created a Google Plus group. And what we do is we study the FDCPA and each other state FDCPA just to have more minds involved in thinking it out. So just a suggestion for some of those people.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate your call, man. Keep thinking, man, and thanks for thinking out the box. All right, we got 1 minute left. First of all, let me give all honors and